Hello and welcome to the Pit Imps Podcast, brought to you by the Brainstorm Brewery. This is episode 77?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, 77, huh? I'm your host, Angelo, and I'm back this week with that guy.
What up, what up?
And a returning guest. This is going to be his second time on here, and I guess the first time wasn't enough, but he was from our posse 10 here, and this is Mike Hardy.
How's it going, guys? What up, the Steel Ryan's tagline there.
Hey, fuck you, man. Get your own thing.
He can steal whatever he wants of yours. He kept fucking saved your ass the last time he was here, if you remember correctly.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm a big fan of Mike, so glad he's here. So, even though he's a Jets fan.
Well, you know, being a Jets fan, I'm used to putting my foot in my mouth, which is good training for this episode.
There you go. You know who else? Your coach likes putting some feet in his mouth. Did he get fired? Did I hear right? Did Rex Ryan, is he even the Jets coach still? Am I crazy?
Knowing the Jets front office, he's probably coach and GM at this point, so.
Probably.
I didn't know. I thought I heard something that he got fired.
I remember you saying that, and I've heard nothing since about that, so I don't think he did. I think you wanted him to get fired.
It's just wishful thinking.
There was talk that he might have been fired at the end of last season, but I think they decided to keep him on, man. Anyway, this is a Magic podcast.
Sorry.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't remember Mike was the one who was on here when Ryan had to leave unceremoniously. Yeah, words and stuff. Halfway through the podcast the one time, and Mike did a great job filling in, so, you know, we decided to dump him back in here because everybody likes an extra person to put their foot in their mouth.
Yeah, why not?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, and a guy that knows his shit no less, so we could have done worse.
We absolutely could have. So, we all know SCG are greedy pricks, and, they decided, you know, to hell with the idea that it was 4th of July weekend. We're still having an open series.
God, did they ever, man. What a sick open series, too.
Yeah. We'll start right with the Legacy. And, you know, it's exciting in the quarterfinals, but when you get to the semifinals, holy fuck.
Oh, we're starting with Legacy this time. Throwing a twist in things.
Said Standard.
No, you said Legacy.
Okay, well, that's where my heart is, but we're going to start in Standard. So we had Julian Wiles versus Gerard Fabiano. Fabiano wins 2-0.
But can I just say real quick, what a star-studded.
That's what I was saying, man. Like, in the quarterfinals, it sounds impressive. When you get to the semifinals, it's holy shit.
Yeah.
Nicholas Vey? Am I missing a letter?
Vea, maybe.
Okay, all right. Versus Mike Sigrist. Sigrist wins 2-0. So we have G-Fabs. He's got, what, 3 GP wins? We have Sigrist, who just won a GP. They're going to play against each other in the semifinals.
A GP winner, and am I wrong? Has he won a Pro Tour?
I know he's at least top-8ed one.
Yeah, I don't think he's won one. I think he has top-8ed one. So we have Reed Duke versus Anthony Rofino. Reed Duke wins 2-1. So who is he going to play? Well, let's see. The options are Devin O'Donnell versus Jared Betcher. Jared Betcher wins 2-1. So we have the Rookie of the Year versus the probable Player of the Year in the bottom half of this bracket. So our semifinals is Gerard Fabiano versus Mike Sigrist and Reed Duke versus Jared Betcher.
Okay, quick side note. Gerard Fabiano, according to my Google Foo, has top 4'd a team limited pro tour in 2002-03.
Yes.
And has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Grand Prix top 8s with 2 wins and a Nationals top 8.
Sweet.
And
he's been on
number
show.
One. He is the number, well, yeah, he's been a guest on here. He's a great guy. He's super cool. But he's the number one Planeswalker points.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Lifetime Planeswalker points.
Got more lifetime Planeswalker points than any other player in Magic, so he plays a lot of fucking Magic.
He does. Every weekend that he can when he's not teaching,
yep.
He is fucking just grinding games.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a teacher, for those who don't know. So, G-Fabs versus Sigrist, and G-Fabs wins 2-0. Reed Duke versus Betcher. Reed Duke wins 2-1. And G-Fabs beats Reed Duke 2-0.
Yeah.
Some of these games were really good. I know I watched the Reed Duke Jared Betcher and I watched the G-Fabs Reed Duke game.
Yeah, this is not a matchup I would anticipate. I mean, sure, he's got the Supreme Verdicts, but man, this is still like any super fast aggro deck like Mono Blue, like Esper Control does not want to see. Like I really expected Reed Duke to walk with this.
Well, there was the big thing with Reed Duke's deck was the fact that he was running those mainboard dead cards that we call domestication.
Yeah.
Not so good against Esper control.
Right. Like, when, I know Gerard wanted to face Reed before he wanted to face Jared in the finals, like, it was a better matchup because of the domestications and so, yeah, and stuff.
But still, 29 creatures, like, that is a control deck's nightmare. Like,
Just yeah, but not no.
Expected.
But Ashiok is amazing, so it's really not.
Yeah, Ashiok is really good. I mean, like I said, this is a match that can go either way, but I just feel like, especially after post board, all the counter spells and stuff that Mono Blue has, just of all the aggro decks, really the best one at keeping them off of Sphinx's Revelation, in spite of not having Thoughtseize and Duress, I think is Mono Blue. Just counters it all day long. I don't know. I didn't expect that. Also, 3 Jace Architect Thought and Reed's board, I thought he came very well prepared for the control matchup.
So Gerard's list, it's a little interesting. So we're going to go over it. Yeah. 2 Ashiok Nightmare Weaver, 2 Elspeth, 3 Jace Architect, and 1 Jace Memory Adept in his name.
Yeah, the split there. What do you make of that, man? This is the first time I've seen someone go 3-1 with those and not just a 4 out with the Architect.
I think what it is he's looking for a more proactive way to win other than Elspeth, so he's got Ashiok plus the Memory Adept main board as a mill option. I mean, it gives you, instead of just having 2 win conditions, you now have 5 or 6 win conditions.
Hey, you're forgetting Mutavault's a win condition, man.
Yeah, but, I mean...
For dirtlers, yeah.
Hey, well, don't say dirtlers. Let me tell you, I have played a lot of decks and seen a lot of decks go deep in Pro Tours over the years that had only man lands as its only win condition.
Yeah. Okay?
That's called playing real Magic.
I like his inclusion of the Memory of Death here. If I ever pack control, I always run it in the sideboard. But it's very fucking good, man. And every time I, like, anyone lands that on me, I tend to be more worried about that, and you know, it depends on the situation, but I think it's really, really good, and I know Architect Thought is super good, and that's kind of gets all the glory, but, and I don't think you should sleep on Memory Depth. It's a good card.
Anytime you can make someone say 10 cards goodbye.
I mean, it's way better than this new Jace they printed. I would much rather have seen Memory Adept in M15 than this living,
yeah, we'll worry about that later, Ryan.
Yeah.
Let's go into, okay, his spells are 4 Detentions for your 4 Zoroastrian Storm, 3 Devour Flesh, 2 Dissolve, a Doomblade, 4 Sphinx's Reb, 4 Supreme Verdict, and 4 Thoughtseize.
Sweet.
He got a sideboard that consists of 2 Archangels, 3 Night Veil Spectre, 3 Nyx Fleece Ram, which did some work against Green White. He was just like, yeah, I'm going to put this here and you're going to run into a wall.
Yep.
Did and he it worked.
2, I think.
That
yeah.
Got a big ass.
Really, really good. A great way to protect your Planeswalkers. And yeah, he did switch into this creature-based package, which, I mean, we're seeing out of control decks. However, he is opting to run things like Archangel Athun and Night Veil Spectre. I mean, we've seen more like, you know, Brimaz, Night Veil Spectre, or just Night Veil Spectres. And that's an interesting mix of creatures that we haven't really seen. On top of 2, I also wanted to say is Devour Flesh in the main board is also something new to this deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like what he's done here.
Yeah. I do as well.
Yeah, the rest of
I like any deck that is just like planeswalkers spell. Yeah.
I cut you off though. I'm sorry. The rest of his sideboard though.
Yeah. Deicide, a single, 2 Gainsay, 1 Ultimate Price, 1 more Ashiok, Nightmare Weaver, and 2 Duress. The Ashioks were insane.
Like, yeah, if they almost single-handedly won
the
Mono Blue matchup there at the end.
If you saw what that did to Reed Duke, like, you understand how powerful that card is.
Really good. I've been snatching them up left and right for super cheap on eBay. Like, I don't know. You know, I'm not a finance guy or anything, but this spec I've had, it's one of my recent ones.
It was cool to see it go ultimate on camera too. Especially in the last game of the day, basically. It was like, oh, that's ultimate. Goddamn. And it just keeps ticking.
I don't get the ultimate really, unless they have a hand. And are they going to have a hand by the time you ultimate this? And like,
I think Reed had 3 cards in his hand, but they were like, 2 of them was domestication, and 1 was.
If graveyard strategies are really big, I mean, could this ultimate hint at future graveyard strategies?
Maybe, I don't know.
Hints in blue. I mean, the new Jace.
I mean, you have to get there though. Like that's.
I think it's more of a flavor-based ultimate, because the idea is he turns nightmares into reality. So he's taking things from the dead and taking things from your mind to create nightmares. So he just, like, wipes your mind in the graveyard. You know, I think it's more of a flavor-based
choice. Yeah, it's a really weird ultimate, but...
Yeah, I mean, well, there was a card in, like, Shards of Alara block or something that did it. So it's the exact same text as that card.
Holy cavity.
But yeah. I also want to point out, this is probably the most diverse top 8 I've seen in Standard in a long time. Where we have like 6 different archetypes here, 5 different archetypes.
Yeah, it's...
There's 3 mono blue lists in the top 8. That's not really diverse.
It's way better than 4 mono blacks, 2 mono blues, and 2 espers.
Yeah. I mean, there is some new stuff. Esper, yeah. I mean, good dick, Gerard with that list. This is pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah, so we have mono blue in second, and this was the Reed Duke list that, hey, he's running Domestication mainboard. That's really the only thing that's like worth really talking about. And he does have a Hypnotic Siren mainboard.
Yeah, I do like the one of Hypnotic Siren.
So do I.
I think you're a Magic Christmas land if you're going to bestow it. And also,
I think it's fine on turn one as a 1/1 flyer. And if for some reason the game does go long, it's pretty damn good if you do get to bestow it.
Telling you, man, this deck wants 7 spells, 28 creatures, 7 spells.
Okay, I'm gonna go all with what Reed Duke says. Yeah, he's the best player in the world right now.
But look at every other mono blue list. It's had success as of late in every mono blue list in this top 8. 7 spells, me 8 dudes.
I think
a one of rapid hybridization. I bet you he kicked himself for not having another one. The card is so good.
I don't know. The games that it's good, Domestication's good as well.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And the Domestication is...
It's just expensive.
It is.
But it's way better for your devotion plan. Like, the whole plan of this deck is turn Thassa on and make sure she stays on.
And, I mean, Domestication's if you're expecting control, like, it's not what you want, like... But it is a more stable source of devotion. I mean, we saw on the weekend him domesticate his own, like, Night Vale Spectre.
Yeah, I mean, cards that he played got off of his Night Vale Spectre that was out of color. He was using, you know, he's like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, Nykthos for black instead because, you know, I have this domestication on said black spell and, you know, I can play this now.
Yeah, he took somebody's pack rat with a domestication and
then
he was able to use Nykthos to get like 3 black off the Night Vale.
And, yeah. Right. And he was like, and I get pack rat tokens now. And this is awesome. And I was just like, ah, damn. And then one of the strange things that I saw him do, which, you know, kind of was unintuitive as far as I was concerned, was him dissolving spells that he couldn't dissolve just so he could scry.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what, huh? Cause they're like, what the hell is that card's name? The Hydra. Guy plays the Hydra and he's like, dissolve. And he's like, yeah. I get scry one.
I know the judge like threw their arm across the table when he went to dissolve that and,
He's like, no, I know.
He's like, I'm scrying. Get out of my face.
I paid 3 to scry.
Yeah.
Not a thought that, you know, an average player would think of, but he's Reed Duke.
Yeah, his play was masterful with this list. Like I said, I've been playing this deck in recent weeks. Megan's been playing it. We've been testing with it. And man, I'm telling you, 7 spells.
Okay. Again, I am going to side with the guy who, is the number one player in the world. If he says what he run was fine. I mean, he was probably playing to the field, man. That's the way I'm looking at it, and
sure.
I'm fine with that. Siggy's list is what we've been seeing a lot more recently with the Hall of Triumph and, you know, the 7 spells, basically, and everything else that's good.
Yeah, 28 dudes. Standard sideboard, 2 domestication. This is the real varied sideboard. The new addition, though, this week that has not shown up in lists. I mean, we've seen the 2 Jace Memory Adepts. That's been really good. Reed obviously opted for Architect-a-Thought, and I think that was a better call this weekend. I think Architect-a-Thought was probably better for this list. I mean, you still get your 2 devotion. And I don't know, against control, I mean, just being able to get a couple more cards in your hand is good. I mean, yeah, Memory Adept draws you 1, but, I don't know. And are you really you're really not trying to build him out, but I like, the 2 Memory Adepts, that's his thing, whatever. But the new card I like in this list, the new addition is this fucking Curse of Swine. It showed up in multiple lists.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new addition, but it's an old addition. When the deck first came out, they were in there.
At the Pro Tour?
Yeah, I want to say there was a couple in the Pro Tour that had them. There was a couple, you know, a bunch of them didn't, especially the top eight ones didn't, so they fell out of favor. But you'd see them pop up real early on, and then they disappeared.
Yeah, I remember had no one like tactics and stuff like that, but yeah,
I don't remember seeing this because I actually saw it in the Pro Tour and was like,
Yeah, it's pretty
funny.
Good.
Every time I've drafted it, I've never used it.
It's a pretty sweet one of. I mean, against your monster's opponents, it's a good game.
Yeah. So, we have Jared Betcher. He's playing his deck.
Yep. Black Red Devotion. Nothing. I don't think he's changed anything.
No.
Yeah, this looks pretty well. I'm not sure he was running for Bio Blights always, but yeah, same thing. He's added a Sire of Insanity to his board too. I don't know if that's
been there.
Has it been there? Yeah. Okay.
Jund Monsters from Julian Wilds. He went 3 Domri, 3 Xenagos, even the split up. Heavier creatures than usual, it seems. The sideboard's different, sorta. 2 Mistcutter Hydra, 3 Nihilia's Disciple, 2 Doomblade, 2 Golgari Charm, a Putrefy, a Chandra Power Master. I got it right this time, fucker. 1 Domri Rod, 1 Vraska, and 2 Rakdos Return.
It almost looks like he's hedging towards like the Esper control deck with like Mistcutter Hydras and the Rakdos Returns.
Right.
Seems like a pretty big hedge against that.
The Nihilia's Disciple's clearly in there for the red deck.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. But yeah, a little bit of spice turn.
I like he's added, he's got the 3 Gore Clan Rampagers, but he added a Reaper of Wilds, which is kind of falling out of favor, but.
Pops in, pops out, pops in, pops out.
I'm not sure about that, but another Jund deck where we're seeing people mess with the numbers on Courser of Krufix. Doesn't seem like we've got that figured out yet if we want 2, 3, or 4.
I want 4.
I mean, I like it, but.
I want 4.
You know, are people right in messing with the numbers? That's what we've seen in recent weeks. I mean, even Brad Nelson is a big advocate of the card cut down to 2.
Well, here's my thing. Anytime I've gone below 4 with, you know, me playing, I never see them. It's like, and if I don't have 4, I just don't draw them. So that's why I'm kind of like, I just want 4 because I want to draw these.
And they're really, really good. I don't know if you heard Patrick Chapin's analysis on it at the Pro Tour, but he like worked out the math and I don't know, whatever when he played the card and said it drew 16 extra cards throughout the tournament.
That is sick. Devin O'Donnell, he's on Mono Blue Devotion. This is the same list as Mike Siggy. Siglist. So we have Green White Aggro from Via.
Yeah, pretty sweet. Making the top 8. Green White, Silesnia Reppin.
Yeah.
I'm surprised this deck doesn't have more showings. Like, there's just so many powerful cards in that color combination to just.
It is. I mean, I like it a lot. Here's my issue with the deck here is he's doing a 2-2 split with Voice and Elvish Mystic. There's so many quality fucking 2 drops in this color scheme. Call a Conclave, Fleece Mane Lion. I mean, Voice. You don't need, this is not the aggro deck. This is not a mid-range deck. This is not Jund Monsters. It's not Greed Ren Monsters. You do not need the Mystics. You are not trying to ramp a turn 3 out on turn 2. You don't need it.
Yeah, but, you almost always want your experiment 1 on turn 1. Like if you're paying a green mana for something in this deck, you want it to be experiment
1. Yeah, he's only running 2 Soldier of the Pantheon. Because he's running 2 Elvish Mystic, like just cut the Elvish Mystics and go 4 Soldiers, 4 Voice, like you just don't need.
See, the lure of the opportunity at a turn 3 advent is.
But then it makes like your turn 4 kind of clunky because what do you do if you have like a Boon Satyr? You just waste the mana? Like,
well, your turn 4, if you have a Boon Satyr, you can actually, Flash Bestow because you still have the Elvish Mystic down.
Right, but.
Yeah, because it's 5, but.
Like I said, there are a couple awkward cards. Like the 2 Rootborn Defenses I think are just kind of cute. I mean, I understand that they're there for the board wipes, but I mean, what are you going to do? Copy your Call or Worm Token if it happens to be in play?
I don't like it. It's a sideboard card and it's a sideboard card that they haven't even been seeing in these lists. Like, Ajani's presence is kind of
like it. If you want to play a populate card in this, I would cut the Rootborn Defenses and put the Scion of Itugazi that's in your sideboard into the main deck. Like,
okay, you know, for me to play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
We know Mono Black has been good, which has a lot of pointed removal, not exile, just straight up destroy.
Right.
We also have seen
quite
a lot of, the boss Sly flying around, which has a lot of, you know, pointed burn. Now, as devil's advocate, I can say that, you know, this was a hedge towards seeing those type of decks.
Well, those decks still got Mizzium Mortars and Chain to the Rocks. The 4 power on the toughness.
Mizzium Mortars, I mean, Rootborn Defensive stops that, right?
Oh, you're talking about the Reborn Defense. I thought you were defying his use of vamping into a Loxodon.
No, we've moved on to Reborn Defense.
Okay, the Reborn Defense.
Pay attention, Stoner.
My counter-argument to that point is, why not just change it to two Voice of Resurgence? Because if you're worried about red decks and black decks, then they have to use their mana on their turn, or you get an extra token anyway.
Yeah, this deck is superior to those anyways in just its creatures. The three power, three toughness dudes, like, is enough for to halt those aggro decks already. And this deck's really good against the black aggro, actually, because that deck doesn't run. I mean, okay, Bioblight hurts this deck, but it doesn't run Devour Flesh or even Hero's Downfall.
Yeah, but I didn't bring up either one of those decks. No, I'm not worried about those.
Price, the black aggro runs, like, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 ultimate price. In this list, it's hard for ultimate price to deal with the Voice of Resurgence, Fleece Mane Lion. Like, it's just not the optimal. Black aggro's removal suite isn't, you know, optimal for this,
But even against, like, mono black devotion, like your big black, you have, if you take the two Reborn Defenses and play two Voice of Resurgence, they have to then take mana on their turn to kill your creatures, or else you're just gonna get value off them trying to instant speed remove your guys. Slowing down their board.
You want God's Willing because it's one mana.
Yeah, God's Willing is way better. And I have no problem with that.
There's Ajani's Presence also with the Strive and one mana.
I was just trying to play devil's advocate there and try and figure out what he was thinking. I mean, we know he was trying to get more worms.
Right.
Voice.
In my opinion, it's a slight hedge towards Esper, and also synergizes very well with Advent and Call of the Conclave and Voice of Resurgence. So I'm not saying it's a bad pick, I just don't know if it's the best pick.
Yeah.
Right.
It needs some work.
The God's Willings. Is the Scry that important?
No, but
over a Johnny's. No, I'm saying, like, why is it being run over a Johnny's Presence? Where you can strive that multiple times to protect multiple things on a turn where, like...
Is it Johnny's Presence the Indestructible, or is that the...
Indestructible +1/+1.
Yeah. Okay, the thing I see being different is with God's Willing, like, you can just give your worm token protection from black and get in for the last... Like, it's almost more reach as well. Like, the fact that your creature's indestructible is good, but protection from a color not only might counter a spell, but then it can get your creature in, or also block your creature. Like... Yeah. It's a little bit more flexible, plus you have the Scry one. Like, they're both really good cards, but the protection can come in, like, say they domesticate your guy, you can give him protection from blue to get him back, and then, you know, they can't, like, bounce him that turn.
Annoying is when I played Mono Black, like, God's Willing is an annoying card. Like, it's
literally like 4-spike where you can't pay mana, and then they get to Scry one.
It's really annoying to go, like, 3-mana Hero's Downfall, and they tap one to, like, save a dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I was just trying to play devil's advocate with all those cards. I'm sorry.
No, you're, like I said, I'm just...
These are questions that are worth asking for people who, you know, look at these lists and go, well, ain't this in there? Well, okay. I'll ask those stupid questions and I'll make myself look like an idiot. Bant Control and Aeth. I know something about this list, but this isn't my list.
Yeah, boo.
Two Elspeth, 4 Jace Architect, 2 Kiora, a bunch of spells that you would normally see in blue-white.
Yeah, this literally looks like blue-white with Kiora.
Yeah, and Miscutter in the sideboard.
It is.
That is what it is. Like, there's really nothing... Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, there's nothing special here.
Mm-hmm. So,
I'm sorry, man. I'm just... When it comes to Ban, I much prefer the version with Caryatid Courser.
So do I. I've been saying that since literally week one of this deck being created.
You're gonna run.
I put the testing in. Like, I know which version's better, and I want Sylvan Caryatids in there. I honestly, the Coursers are, like, secondary to me. I want Sylvan Caryatids, though, no matter what.
I mean, yeah. Very good against aggro. I mean, it lets you, not only are those cards good against aggro, but they let Bant Control get ahead
on
their other control decks. I mean, you have a mana with Caryatid. I mean, you're casting your stuff, you know, a turn ahead of them. That's pretty relevant.
Yep. I mean, I want Caryatids no matter what. I don't care if it's the only 4 creatures you have in there. Those are the 4 you want.
Yeah.
Right. And the problem I see with this Bant Control is, like, the super quick aggro is just going to go under everything. Where if you had the Coursers and Caryatids, or at least the Caryatids, you could speed bump them until you can get to your Wrath mana. Or even get Wrath mana a turn earlier.
You know, the 1, 2, 3 incidental life that a Courser will gain you over a game is enough to... you know, thwart a burn deck or, you know, a hyper fast slide deck or something.
Fair, but I mean, to be real honest, the blocks that you'll get from a, Karyatid does almost the same against fast decks.
They don't,
and in the course, if you get your Karyatid turn two, you don't want to cast Courser turn three. Like, you're looking to go Kiora. You're looking to go something
sick. Jace minus, you know, plus one. But like, if you look at the list, if you could like cut like the Blind Obedience and the Deicide and like maybe cut like a Sphinx's Rev, and then right there's your Coursers. Like, it's not, it's almost like he's trying to play more of a toolbox style build. Well,
the Courser two, also the two power, four toughness, that body just, it wrecks mono black aggro, it wrecks mono red, and it just kills everything.
Oh no, it's relevant. It clearly is. I'm just, you know, I mean, I like I said, dude, I've put in a lot of testing with this deck. I know it, and like, Karyatid is like the card you want in this deck. Like, it's a linchpin to it. When it's not in there and I run it, it just seems so clunky. When it's in there, it seems like a machine.
Yeah, when it's not in there, it's like the deck's just trying to be cute and splashing for Kiora.
Yeah.
It's not trying to, like, you know.
It does put more strain on your mana base. I will say that.
Alright, I'm gonna play devil's advocate for a second here. Okay. Ryan, in a little bit of an argument with your Courser, this deck, I don't know if it wants Courser as much because the control deck, you're kinda almost playing like mind games with him, like, does he have the counterspell, does he have the rev, what does he have? And Courser kinda gives your opponent that extra information, like, that's his drawback. So, this type of deck might want to keep some of that information back. I mean, one and two life being super incidental isn't huge for this deck, running Sphinx's Revelation and Elixir of Immortality. While the blocker's nice, but at least the Karyatids, they can ramp your verdict on three if you absolutely need it. They make bigger revelations. You have counter magic more open. I mean,
I want both of them. I definitely want both.
What he's saying is I don't think Courser's good in this at all, to be real honest. I think it's sideboard at best.
I think it's against control. It blocks and kills Mutavolts.
If you're looking,
it's a good body. It gains you life and it forces your opponent, especially the aggro and mid range decks, they gotta overextend their board to get around you.
They can already do that for Karyatid, and when you're playing against control, you don't want control to know what you have in your hand.
No, but you're still beating down. If you're beating down against them, and you,
I'm not worried about beating down in a control against control.
They still gotta play around what you have, if they know what you have.
And a good control player will do it. Dude, yeah. I'll tell you what, man, I can give you your list, right? And I will give Guillaume Wafatapa my list. A good control player. And he's going to make you look bad because he knows every single spell in your hand where you have nothing. Bad
because it's Guillaume Waffle fucking top.
Okay, but we'll put you both at the same skill level.
I like the Courser, man. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it's right in this deck. I don't want to give that info up.
I don't know. Frank Labor will disagree. He just won a 5K. And
I don't care about Frank Labor.
Also, in the sideboard, I think you have this deck's idea of the best three drop to fighting his aggressive decks, and that's Brimaz. Like, he's got a bigger front end, so you can kill those 3/3s that the green-white aggro deck's playing. He has Vigilance, so he can pressure and stay up for blocks. Plus, he produces a bunch of tokens, which, like you were saying, Ryan, it makes them overextend to try and get around,
Brimaz is definitely sweet in the side of this. Yeah, I like Brimaz. I like Archangel Athune maybe in the board of this. Like, I don't know.
What I'm saying is,
one, but
in this deck, like, you don't have room for 6 3-drop creatures, so Brimaz trumps the Courser just a little bit. Like, in the strategy that you're going for, where you're trying to be defensive while applying pressure against another control deck, or just stonewalling an aggro deck, I think Brimaz fits it way better. Plus,
well, against another control deck, I'm gonna take it out, games 2 and 3, like, I'm not gonna have Courser in, you know, game 1 is one thing, but we're talking post-board, like,
I don't want to punt that game to him.
It also digs you through your deck, which is something control.
I force Sphinx's Revelations to do that.
Yeah.
What more do you need?
And Jace Architect of Thought.
The same.
And Kiora.
Yeah, I mean, really, what more do you need?
More. You could be as greedy. You could be greedy.
Sometimes you get greedy and you end up getting caught with your hand in the honeypot, man.
Nothing wrong with drawing more cards.
I mean, there's extorting from the Boy Scouts greedy, and then there's Scrooge McDuck greedy. You gotta find a happy balance somewhere in between if you're gonna be greedy. You don't want to go too far.
You can never draw too many cards. That's how I feel.
Yeah, Ryan, we're gonna have to respectfully disagree on that. I do not want Courser in this list.
Well, we'll keep an eye on this deck going forward, and we'll see what people do. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Okay. Legacy.
Yeah,
real format. Dan Jordan versus Eric Smith. Dan Jordan wins 2-1. Charlie Mitchell, all 13 years old of him?
Yeah, this kid was a little badass.
He was.
And he looked like he was like 50 pounds soaking wet.
Oh, dude, he looked like he could have been 5. Like, yeah. I ain't even lying. And Josh Edelstein. Charlie Mitchell beats him in all of his 13, 14 years old. So here's the thing. If you've been playing this game like I have for as many years as I have and you see a result like this, it makes you wonder, what the fuck have I been doing wrong all these years? And apparently, it's I'm not throwing burn at people's face. Josh Sikio versus JD Near. Sikio wins 2-0. Levi Teets. I heard the proper pronunciation this week. Versus Jesse Parnell. Levi Teets wins 2-0. Levi Teets over Josh Sikio 2-0. And Dan Jordan ends the Charlie Mitchell dream. Almost called him Charlie Murphy.
Charlie Murphy.
Yeah, we're going to make waffles. Dan Jordan ends up winning this in what could have been a great finals, but it turned out to be a Delver mirror.
Yeah, Dan Jordan, though, with the prettiest deck in the room.
Always.
Did you see that thing?
Always.
Is he known for that?
Yeah, he always foiled out, man.
He plays Blue, White, Red Delver and Esper Delver, I think. Is that his other deck he plays?
Yeah.
Esper Stoneblade or Esper Deathblade, one of those. And that deck's entirely foiled, too. And it's
all foiled. It's what he does.
Forces foil?
No. You can't foil forces. Yeah, well, I guess you can now. But yeah. He's probably working on it. The judge promo.
Oh yeah, that is right. Yeah. I'm sure he's probably on his way.
But something I wanted to point out, cause you were talking about, Charlie Mitchell, and like looking at it, it's a very similar theory that me and my friends have with like UFC is like you had the guys that were boxers that switched to UFC fighters, but this generation coming up are people that grew up and like when they were 5 years old said, I want to be in the UFC. Now, with Magic, you know, a lot of the older players that have been playing for 10, 15 years, they started off, you know, like a card game, and then it took them 10 years to get serious, where these kids, they come in like second, third grade, like, man, Magic's awesome, I know what I can do with it, there's all these resources and articles, and they're, you know, they're just getting better, younger. I noticed that at local shops, you know, we've got like 12, 13, 14-year-old kids that come in there and spike F&M, which doesn't seem like a big thing, but when you look, you know, 10 years ago, 12-year-old kid, right. You're like, what's this kid doing here, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, I have a kid that, well, he's not a kid anymore, he's actually 19, but he started playing when he was about 10 with us at my LGS, so, you know, he put in his time, but by the time he hit about 13, in like those 3 years of playing with us, he became legitimately formidable. Like when you sat down against him, you knew you was in for a match where, you know, normally you sit down across from a 12, 13-year-old and you're like, yeah, I got this. And yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I'm just really, my biggest thing is the fact that this was a legacy event.
Right.
But you know, I mean, like if I saw this in standard, it wouldn't shock me nearly as much because just the knowledge of cards you need to have to play legacy is so much faster than what you need to play or to play standard. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like if, you know, if he never had the standard training wheels, air quotes, if, you know, if he just started on legacy, I mean, he's playing burn, which is obviously more budget deck.
It is.
So, you know, he could have just picked up legacy burn because he saw, you know, the older kids at school playing legacy or whatever, you know. And he's like, man, I want to play with them. So he just looks up whatever the cheapest deck is and then just plays it. You know, legacy is a lot like any other eternal format, modern, vintage. The more you play a deck, the more you know the ins and outs and the matchups, the better you're going to be. So, like, if this guy just picked up a deck and has just been grinding away for the last 2 years, you know, he's going to be super good with it. So, I mean, it's not as surprising to me as it would have been 5 years ago, but it's still, I mean, 13 years old, I couldn't sit still and watch TV for 2 hours. So to be able to sit in a Magic tournament for, you know, 7, 8 rounds and stay composed, it stuns me.
You know what he was doing. I don't know if you watched, but that kid sideboarded quick as fuck.
Yeah, and like, yeah. He's played the matchup so much, he knows exactly what he has to do.
Kid knew what he was. Even like, 13, like, he's like sideboarding game 2 and then changing his sideboard for game 3s.
Right, which
I knew what a sideboard was when I was 13.
I did, man. A lot of players just did not, still don't do that properly.
To know the difference.
Although he did end up losing, probably to a misplay. He wanted to get down a Vexing Shusher instead of a Goblin Guide.
Yep.
And that's probably really what knocked him out. He was playing against a control deck, so his understanding of why you wanted the Shusher made sense, but that second Goblin Guide would have been a lot more taxing.
Yep. That damage. Yeah, he knew what he was doing though, like, as far as like, you know, the little intricacies of what's good on the play versus the draw, like, in terms of how he sideboarded, like, Yeah, yeah. Kept good with the deck. I mean, he's clearly versed in it, so.
Right. So in third place, though, I hate to skip over this, we had a Shardless Bug deck. In fifth place, oh boy, we had Pox. It's Lone Pox, but we had Pox.
What the fuck?
So we got three Bloodghast, because he's a Bloodghast. He gets haste when your opponents have less than 10. We have four Liliana of the Veil. That makes sense. His lands of note. Three Mishra's Factory, one Tabernacle, and three Urborg. Yes, three Urborg.
It's pretty important when you have to hit all these double black.
Yeah, it is. He has two Pernicious Deed, three Abrupt Decay. That is a pretty sick removal package right there. Three Entomb, two Cabal Therapy, two Hymn to Torak, two Innocent Blood, three Inquisition, three Life Alone, a single Raven's Crime, because realistically, that's all you ever need, and four Smallpox.
And what's something that the less seasoned player might notice is they'll see Entomb, and they'll be like, okay, so I put my Bloodghast in the graveyard. Entomb says any card. It does say a creature. Usually it's a Life from the Loam or a Raven's Crime, depending on the matchup.
In this one, it's going to be Raven's Crime quite often, because it's like your one way to really get that card in there.
That's your Raven's Crimes 2 through 4, but it's also your Life of the Loam, Life from the Loam 4 through 6. You know, it's your tutor. I mean, instant speed 1 black tutor. Vampiric Tutor is banned in the format. That's basically what this is in this deck, without the life cost. So
it's so nice. It's so nice.
This deck is fucking sick, dude.
Yeah, he has two chains of Metastopheles in the sideboard.
Can you? What the fuck? First of all, this goofy ass looking goat demon.
Dude, chains of Metastopheles is this shit.
With the weird, like his horns are all like fucked up. What is this card? I don't understand the words on this card. It's like a paragraph for starters.
The first thing you want to do is you want to go into Gatherer and you want to look up Oracle text.
The text on this is fucking with me, man. Like,
basically what it is every time somebody draws a card, they discard a card.
Why isn't this, they need to reprint cards like this, Pernicious Deed.
It says, let's see, I will read the straight text. Every time a player draws a card, that player must first discard a card from his or her hand. Now, that's the part that's important, and the rest of it you can pretty much ignore, because this says, fuck you, Brainstorm.
Yeah, well,
what if you don't have a card in your hand?
No, the key exception is if a player would draw a card except the first one he or she draws, then you discard a card instead. So you always get your card for turn.
That's way different.
But when you cast your Brainstorm, instead of drawing three, you discard three and then put two on, or then you draw three and then put two on top. But the whole point of the deck is you're trying to make them discard cards and eat away at their resources. So literally it's only for, you know, your Storm decks and Brainstorm based decks. Just to shut off their extra card advantage.
Yeah, when you see a deck that says it has four Brainstorms and four Jaces in them, these come in. He also has an extra Pernicious Deed in there.
Still my favorite removal spell of all time.
Just because you're a smart man. He has three Crop Rotation, two Extirpate, Split Seconds important to him, two Golgari Charms, a Nature's Claim, because we don't care about you gaining life. Nope.
Not at all.
We have a Cabal Therapy, we have two Duress, and another, and we have a Caracas.
I do like the crop rotation in the sideboard. I mean, if you ever come up against, like, a lands deck or something where they're just gonna keep chain wastelanding, you absolutely need your Urborg, so that's always a good way to go fetch it up.
Right. I love Pox. I'm sorry. Yeah, I love chains.
Yeah, dude. There's so many sweet cards in there. Just like tons of just sweet cards.
I keep trying to play it in modern, and it doesn't have things like Entomb or Pernicious Deed to help it.
Yeah, you know what? A while back, when Schmitty was still building decks, me and him collaborated basically on the Pox deck that was doing good, and it was almost like a port of a deck that I almost won a PTQ with. And that was when it was fucking extended, but basically I ported almost the entire deck over and he made some changes to it. And yeah, there's still something to be said about a turbo or a Tarmo Rack Smallpox deck. Like, these things work.
I mean, 8-Rack's still a deck, and it's basically the Smallpox in modern.
Right. That's the deck he kind of came up with, and it's still being played. There's some changes I would make to it now. I could ship you a list later if you want, or if you wanted one, but. Like, it's basically your Raven's Crying, your Smallpox. There's a couple cards that he pulled out that I thought he shouldn't have, and people have not added them back in yet. We'll talk later.
Sounds good.
Okay, so Pox is gone out of that. Next is Belcher. Jesus Christ, what an insane top eight thus far.
The obligatory glass cannon.
Yes, absolutely glass cannon. I've been over this a couple times over the past few weeks. I don't think I need to go over it again. Although he has reforged the soul in his sideboard. What? That's interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
He has a super weird wish board here.
Yeah, he really does. Like, he goes almost into a red wish deck.
Yeah, Diminishing Returns, I haven't seen that card in forever. Nope. Look that one up if you don't know it.
Well, it showed up a couple weeks ago. I was talking about it. But that's Alliances, so yeah, look that up. And he was running the Stomping Ground too, which I love.
And then wonder why they made Time Spiral a card in Urza Saga after you read that card.
Yeah. We had Infect in here.
Now is this the Tom Ross Infect, basically?
Blue-green Infect.
Yep, it's pretty much the standard deck here.
Yeah, at this point it is. So that's cool. And then we had Esper Deathblade in 8th, but we also had a Painter deck in 10th, Storm in 11th, Reanimator in 13th. I want to see this Reanimator list.
I mean, this is a pretty spicy top 16.
Jingataxis. I like it. Yeah, cool. I'm sorry. I needed to just look at the Reanimator list.
Is Elish Norn a normal Legacy Reanimator target?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know if it had become folded in, because I know at one point it was like the Blazing Archon was like your anti-aggro card.
Yeah, Elish Norn's better.
It attacks better, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. You know what show this is, guys. I don't have to make this up, but before we get into that show, I received a question from Buttercup via email. And, you know, I always beg for emails, so I'm going to read this. And it actually pertains to what we're going to talk about today. It says, guys, when evaluating new cards for an upcoming block, what do you guys look for in any of the formats or new set? And Ryan, I'll let you go first.
Oh, no way, man. This was addressed to you. This
was addressed to the Pit Imps podcast.
Okay, repeat the question.
Oh, Jesus, jumped up. Christ, see. You know what that was? That was me catching him not paying attention for anybody out there.
I'm paying attention. No, that's
not. He doesn't know.
How do we evaluate cards in a new set for a particular, like, format?
Yes. Because, like, you know, we'll say best legacy card, you know?
I don't know. That's a weird question. Like, I look for things I like or what might interest me or go along with what I'm currently playing or what I can add to certain decks, what takes away from certain decks. Like, you know, I just am starting to get into modern, so I'm pretty much set with deck I got. And you know, I'm not really like, you know, sure, I look at the new cards. And so I look at the new cards and those colors. You know, things like that.
So what you're saying is you look to tweak when you...
Right. He does archetype hunting. He has an idea of what he already is playing, and he looks for things to add on to it.
Yeah, I look at what, like, cards, like, may contribute to the current metagame standard in particular. Like, as I'm looking through the new set of M15, as I'm going through each color, I'm thinking of how it might contribute to an already existing deck or, you know, maybe just, you know, or how maybe it hinders another deck or maybe there's a new deck entirely.
Which, to be honest, just because of the way you play, I doubt you see that as much. You seem to be more of a tweaker than me, Ryan.
I look for it though.
I doubt that you, you know, I don't
That's
doubt
why
that
I
you
have my
it.
Weird deck building challenges, because I do, right. I think of these new cards like Athreos and stuff, and I think there's a deck out there, like, it just hasn't been found, and like, I mean, that's, so I try to look for stuff like that, like, when they go into like, stuff I'm trying to do, like,
right.
I'm working on like a Grim Guardian build right now, which is just fucking weird, like, I just need to build it and play it and get it, you know, out of my system, basically.
Sweet.
Just get it over with, like, you know, so I look at, you know, try to see if there's anything new there, like, is there some new themes, like, in this set, there's, like, a bunch of, like, it seems like goblins may be a thing, like, would that be a deck to watch out for going forward? Is that an archetype?
Is it? Too? I don't think there's enough goblins.
I don't think so in standard. I think,
not right now, but I think that they like, I don't know, it seemed like they included quite a few in this new set to make me think like, okay, there might be something with that in future sets.
Okay. All right. How do you do it there, Mike?
Well, it's funny because I almost do the exact opposite thing that Ryan does.
Yeah, I do something completely different.
I kind of look at it as in like a broad general sense, like especially brand new cards, not just reprints. I'll look at them and then kind of like think back to other cards that have been printed and what's similar and, you know, what have they changed and how could that affect other, you know, different, you know, like for standard, for instance, you know, they have their big, the soul cycle. And if you kind of look at them and compare them to Titans, because they cost six mana, they're mythic, you know, they just have general ideas that are similar, and you're like, is this a Titan? No, okay, but is it better than most creatures? You know, do you just kind of go through, like, your layers of comparison to see how things match up to the past? And I'm a very, like, I like to, you know, think of things like a catalog, and it's like, you're looking through it, and it's like, oh man, it's something new. How does it, you know, is it better? Is it an upgrade over what I had before? Or, you know.
You try to find a clone for every card and...
Right, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
I get what you're doing. No, that's...
Cause you can look at, like, Act on Impulse, you know, one of the new M15 cards is kind of a divination in red, you know, so you have to look, it's like, is divination, would you play divination in a burn deck? Yes. Okay. Would you play divination in a burn deck if you could only play those cards that turn? And then you start, you know, you kind of start balancing out to try and figure out, is this card good in standard? Is this card good in legacy? You know, you just have to compare it and see if it, and sometimes, like, Deathrite Shaman, you know, it's terrible in standard. Or, you know, subpar in standard, we'll say. But in sets with fetch, or formats with fetch lands, it becomes, you know, banworthy in some instances. So it's just, it's funny how even different formats, different cards can be good or bad, so.
Okay, well, the way I do it is, and this is going to sound very basic to a lot of people, but this is honestly how I look at it is, you know, I kind of incorporate a little bit of what Mike does, but I use that as a shortcut. Where it's just like, okay, this is this card, but it costs one more mana. You know, like, all right, fine, you know. Like, I don't need to reevaluate a 2-2 for 2 in green. It's a bear. I move on. But basically what I'll do is first thing is I read the card. Like, I know this sounds retarded, but I just read the card and I go, okay, the effect on it is powerful. Or, you know, it's a 7-7. Okay, that's powerful. Any novice can look at that and go, this is powerful. So where's your drawbacks? Then that's what I go look for. What's the drawbacks? And I go up there and I see casting cost of 9. Okay, that drawback is entirely too difficult for me to put in. But then if I see something that's like, you know, discard 3 cards for a 7-7, but the casting cost is 2, okay, yeah, that's well worth it.
Especially with something like in that general ideas, then you look at the drawback of, can I build around this drawback?
Right.
You know, this thing is so powerful, maybe I can use that drawback to an advantage somewhere else.
Right. And it basically, I mean, it sounds silly, but almost anybody can read a card and go, holy crap, that's powerful. I mean, look at the amount of people who build EDH decks because they don't have to worry about things like mana cost as much.
Right. The curve is very
forgiving.
Loose. And, yeah.
Yeah. It's very forgiving. So you can go a little bit higher up. Well, I'm looking for the deals. And then I do things like Mike said where I'm looking for that shortcut. I'm like, okay, this is this. And then I also do things like Ryan does where it's like, but this slides right in right now. Kind of like Urborg. It's like, oh, that just slides right into mono black, makes Mutavault really good for the next, you know, few months. Yeah, okay, I don't really need to see anything more than that. And that's pretty much how I go about it. And the rest of it's just a feel and just the years of playing the game. You know, I just, sometimes you can just look at a card and go, yep.
And in my opinion, there's no real wrong way to go about it either. Like, is, if you think a card's powerful, try it out. The worst case is you're wrong. I mean, it's not like somebody's gonna, you know, shame you for it. And if they do, then they're just a jerk. But, you know, if you think something looks cool or powerful, build a deck, proxy something up, test it out with your friends, you know, see if it actually is. I mean, sometimes you'll find cards like, look at Trading Post. Everybody thought it was just kind of a joke card.
They
and then
did?
Brad Nelson, well, I mean, it has a ton of effects, but, you know, it makes goat tokens. Like, at first glance, you're just kind of like, you know, whatever.
Oh, and then man, I saw Brad, that card and was like, how do I break this?
Right, exactly. You had the Staff of Domination thought, like, man, this is so many abilities. Or, I'm trying to think of an innocuous one. You know, like, cards like Thrag Tusk and Primeval Titan, you see those, you're like, man, that is good, or that goes
great. I mean, you clearly come across, there's also though, like, and doing that though, I think you need to look too, like, it is fun to try to look at each individual card and see if, like, could this be the next thing? You know?
Oh yeah, it clearly is. I enjoy it.
And, I came up with an example, like, Jerry Thompson, when he used, what's the red graveyard card from Innistrad that you exile cards and dealt damage to a creature to make, like, extra reach in his blue-white-red control. Like, it seemed like, not Burn at the Stake. I can't remember. Anyway, it was, like, a red and a colorless, Harvest Pyre? Is that it?
Harvest Pyre,
yep. It it's great and limited, but nobody ever thought to put it in their constructed deck. And then just that little light bulb in playtesting, you're like, oh man. You know, that happens all the time with new sets.
Yeah, I think it comboed with Boros Reckoner, right?
Yeah, or it was just good removal, so.
It comboed real good with Boros Reckoner, though. Ryan's right there.
That was the reason it was put in the deck, but, you know, it was not a one-trick pony either, which made it very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's things like, finding like things like one thing I noticed in this set, like we got Shrapnel Blast and then they give us this juicy artifact we could blow up, and the scuttling, I don't know, the engine thingy.
You're using that for the wrong thing, bro.
Oh, I know, but still, I mean, to shrapnel blast them for 5 and then do them 6 with the scuttling doom engine.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. If I'm using shrapnel blast, I'm using something like, I don't know, an indestructible land that I know is going to be there when I go to do it.
Or Tormod's Crypt, something that nobody's ever going to destroy, or, you know, Ornithopter. So, you know, something that you don't have a huge investment in.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just saying for...
Let's move real quick, though, into the best. And I will explain why what you're doing is wrong, right? The best card.
It's not wrong. There's tons of different ways you could use that card. It's great in control. Like, it'd be, it's a good card. Like,
the best card.
There's weird things you can do with it. Like, there's things when you're looking over a new set, like little interactions like that you should look for. Like, if you could pull that off in a sealed game, that's the nuts.
Yeah, in a sealed game. I'm just going to swing with it until they're forced to kill it.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I'm not even going to worry about shrapnel blasting. I'm just being serious. Like, unless it's for lethal.
If it gets to a point where you can't swing with it or something happens or it's tapped down or something, you can throw it away to shrapnel blast.
Yeah, there is that option if, you know, it gets claustrophobia or something, but
I think it's the card.
Let us move on to the best card. My best card in standard is in fact Scuttling Doom Engine. And here is why. This is a 6/6/4/6. It cannot be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. When Scuttling Doom Engine dies, it deals 6 damage to target opponent. The damage, very key part to this. This card reads, kill target Elspeth. That is exactly what it reads. The creatures can't block it, and if she uses her negative ability to blow it up, guess what you do with the damage? Redirect it back at her. And we know Elspeth's good. So
pretty good answer to Elspeth. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's colorless, so any deck can use it. So that's versatility, which is a big thing that I look for. Dude, this card, we're going to have to deal with this for the next year. This is going to be in standard. And no one's arguing with me, so.
Nope.
I can see it as maybe a finisher in control. I don't know. I don't know if that's the deck that releases it. Maybe in the Elspeth matchup or Mir.
I think it goes right into like a Jund Monsters type build as your top end. Like 6 mana, 6/6 that when it dies deals 6. I mean,
but is this better than the Souls at 6 mana for a 6/6?
Yes.
It's the fact that it's colorless in a 3-color deck would make it better, yes. Like, it's just way easier to cast. And it can't be blocked by Courser of Kruphix. It can't be blocked by Sylvan Caryatid. It can't be blocked by Mutavault. It can't be blocked by Elspeth tokens. It's
He's making my case for me. I'm just going to sit here and drink this fixed gear American Red Ale and let him talk.
Yeah, you're at least going to get in. You're definitely, too. I mean, they're forced to answer it, and it's going to get across. It's 6 mana, 6 damage guaranteed.
Almost. I mean, it can be Void Snared to hell and back.
Or exiled.
Yeah. But most of the time, it's going to do something nasty, and it does require an immediate answer. Mike, what'd you pick?
Well, I had kind of a tough decision, so I picked 2. I know it's a little cop-out.
Yeah, pick one.
Pick one?
Pick one of the two, man. One of the two.
All right, my favorite card is Nissa, but that's not my pick for what's going to have the biggest influence on Standard.
Fair.
I think Stoke the Flames, which is silly to say because it's a little common, uncommon card.
What is this card?
I'm looking for it for the exact wording. I believe it is red 2 for an instant with Convoke.
Yeah, it deals 4 damage.
And it deals 4 damage to target creature or player, which is pretty big. The fact is, red-white burn is a big archetype in Standard right now. If you put Young Pyromancer in that deck, it starts shooting out tokens for every burn spell. Well, Stoke the Flame starts becoming real cheap when you have a bunch of Pyromancer tokens out. So, it's another type of... War Leader's Helix. It's another 4 damage spell at instant speed, but you could actually cast it for free. You know, you can keep your Young Pyromancer and tokens back to block, end of their turn, tap them down, shoot them for 4. It extends your reach in that burn deck even more. And it's also, you know, when you have Caryatids and Elspeth tokens, you know, you can do something like that too. And it turns all your creatures into mana at that point for a burn spell. I think it's one of the best burn spell or removal spells in the set.
I have a hard time arguing with you. Like, I see a lot of applications for it. I think it's a very good card. It is in that 4 slot, which is kind of difficult. Like, it has to have a great impact. 4 damage most of the time is.
You gotta have a board presence too to convoke it.
Right.
But at worst, it's still 4 mana, 4 damage, which isn't the worst. But, yeah, you know, best case scenario, it's no mana, 4 damage.
Yeah, in that scenario, it's great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm also tapping things that could be attacking.
Right. What I'm saying is, like, you have, because with Convoke, the card doesn't have to not have summoning sickness. So, you know, you go on.
Yeah, but you have to have a red creature.
Right.
And that's where the issue is, because, like, you know, most red creatures are turning sideways.
Okay, here's an example for you. Turn 2, you play your young pyromancer.
Yep.
Turn 3, you play a burn spell, make a token. Turn 4, you go lightning strike, tap my 4 guys, deal you 4. That's 10.
That I like. See, because I don't want to turn pyromancer sideways.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But in that scenario, he's just generating value off the spells you're already going to play to kill your opponent, and then that value could be used for free burn later in the game.
Okay. Ryan!
Yo!
What'd you pick, man?
Well, I think it's rather obvious what the best standard cards will be, just in terms of their impact, and they're gonna have to be played. It's what they've given us. It's unfortunate we lose the shock lands, the pain lands. I mean, it's necessary evil.
Brian,
I don't know if I'm gonna call it necessary evil. These are just good.
They're good, but when I came in, we had the buddy lands that, like,
these are better than buddy lands.
I don't think
much so. Better. Much
play
better.
With them. Play with them, Ryan. This is a skill test, brother. Play with them. These are much better than buddy lands.
I know Angela can back me up on this. I'm gonna drop a little knowledge on Ryan since he's never played with these. This, when I started, this was the only dual land you got that wasn't $20. Okay, these were the, you know, F&M dual lands essentially.
Well, that's because the only reason they weren't $20 is because they were printed a bazillion times.
Right, but okay, when you need red or green mana on turn 1, you're willing to pay a life to get that. In this case, blue or green mana, or black or green mana, which I think is the biggest one.
Yeah, and a buddy land would come in tapped, I get that, but...
Right, but look at your shock land. You have to pay 2 life to get that on turn 1. This is only 1 life. And then later on, you know, if you need it, you might pay that second life. You might not. So it's a consistent flow of mana for a very little cost.
Yeah. Very good. I'm excited to play with them. I'm happy we got some form of dual lands. It wasn't, you know, it's not the fetch lands or anything like that. I think that's to come still, but yeah, the pain lands are good for now. I mean, but best overall card, I think, of media impact in the next few months is Nissa, while we still have the Shocklands.
Yeah, when the Shocklands leave, though, I think she's going to fall off quite a bit.
I don't know, okay.
Mono Green looks pretty strong.
It does, but, I mean...
I'm going to find a few things from Mono Green, like, I don't know, man. I think Nissa's going to be a thing in some way, shape, or form until she's gone, like...
Okay, I got a decklist challenge. Me and a couple of my buddies were working on something. What do you guys think about a mono green, splash black, and you have your Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, and Cryptghast in it with, Nissa. So, Cryptghast, whenever you tap a swamp or mana, you get double the mana. Urborg makes all your lands swamps. Nissa says untap up to 4 forests. So, you can play Nissa, untap 4 forests, tap it, play your Cryptghast on the same turn, and then untap with like 10 mana available.
Oh, those nasty things you could do with it, even in standard with, Shrine.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Shrine to Nyx. The shit you could pull with her in Mono Green Devotion. Like,
yeah.
I think she makes the new. I think she could go in a deck with even the 7-drop Garrick. That even though he's 7 fucking mana.
I think 7-drop Garrick in the long run is going to have more of an impact than Nissa. I hate to say it.
Man,
I think immediately, like for the next 3-4 months or whatever it is, like she's just going to be broke because you're going to be like, Nisa's in a go same turn. Like that's just not right.
Like to me, Nissa has the important thing of she can defend herself if necessary. She can turn your land into a 4/4.
Yeah, she has the confidence.
Or, you know, she's a 1-mana planeswalker with 4 loyalty. You can look at it that way too.
Oh, I'm not arguing that. My thing is, she can be a 1-mana planeswalker. And the thing is, like, I haven't seen cons yet. I just haven't. So I don't know what house Khons is going to support green. Khons doesn't support green.
I think we're seeing it now, and her ultimate hints at that. Like, her ultimate is about playing a basic color, mono-colored deck.
That's fair, but the fact that it's mono-color doesn't mean that a set isn't going to, you know, be more favorful to one color than other color. I mean, Theros was a mono-colored deck. It was a mono-colored set, and clearly black got favored.
Oh, yeah.
There's a good chance that green just might, you know, basically be forgotten. I see red being the big color for cons.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a huge limb here. This is my Nissa theory. I think that somebody in Magic R&D, be it Rosewater or be it Forsyth or whoever, really likes Nissa and hated hearing all the bad things that were said about the Zendikar one, so they pushed this one super hard.
Imagine how broke she is in EDH. Like, I don't even want to see what Tice can do with this. Like,
I mean,
She's evil. Like, I don't know. I think she's going to have a big impact. Like, you agreed with me the first few months, certainly. After that, it's kind of yet to be determined. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I disagree about the 7-mana Garrick. He's 7-mana. That's like one more than...
See, I think they both go in the same deck.
I could definitely see that too. Nissa sure as hell ramps you into it. I mean, you float 5, untap. I mean, you could play him on turn 5. You get her out, you could easily play her turn 4. With 1-mana dork, and then you go him on turn 5. That's pretty fucking sick.
Well, the only other 7-mana planeswalker, no, Nicol Bolas was 8-mana. We've never had a 7-mana. Karn is the only other 7-mana. And a 7-mana planeswalker has to change the game when it hits.
Does Garrick not do that?
Garrick, he adds to your board at least. I don't know if he changes games. You know, he could destroy a creature or a planeswalker or make a guy. But the fact that he makes a 3-3 is huge on his plus, and it has death touch. Yeah. So
I wouldn't
trade up.
Initially either, because he's kind of like, Vraska to me right now is like a Garrick Apex Predator light.
Like, right. Very light.
Yeah, very light. Like, vacate, but I mean, that's probably the thing you're gonna do is blow up some form of non-land permanent.
I think the thing that Garrick has going for you is that he catches you back up if you're behind. Cause like, either they're ahead of you on board and you need another guy to block, or they have a planeswalker that's about to ultimate, you slam him and kill it, or there's just some big creature that's been pounding you in the face, like a monstrous, you know, Stormbreath Dragon, and you just play him, kill it, gain some life back. You know, he's gonna catch you back up. I just don't know if he has the end the game potential that he probably needs at 7-mana. So I think he's good in like a mid-range deck, or you know, some sort of ramp deck where you can, you know, if you get behind, he's like your emergency red button to kind of catch back up. But he's not going to be like a finisher in a control deck or anything like that.
He's not that. But I mean, like, look, I look at these abilities and there's not one of them that I don't want to use.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, all four abilities are uber powerful. We have this thing called a Shrine to Nyx right now. You know, that thing that counts devotion. Yeah. And
you could play him stupid early.
Gives you bunches of mana. Like,
yeah. If you ever wanted to play a 7-drop, this is the time to do it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it just
short of Gaia's Cradle or something. This is the most mana you've ever been able to produce in standard in 10, 15 years. So
since these cloud posts, yeah.
So, yeah. So you can, I mean, 6 and 7 mana is almost like 4 and 5 mana used to be. Like, you, between your mana dorks and your Nykthos and now Nissa and, you know, just all this Convoke, like, big spells don't need bad spells anymore. Like, this is Battlecruiser magic. It's getting to that. This is Rise of Eldrazi limited, but in constructed.
Oh my god. Ryan, yeah. Best modern card.
Wait, hang on, real quick. So we're on the record. You're Scuttling Doom Engine.
Yep.
Painlands / Nissa, and we got...
Pick one.
Painlands.
Okay.
And, Stoke the Flames over
Stoke
there.
Stoke the Flames.
Cool. All right, what are you asking me? Modern card?
Modern card. You put two again, so pick one.
I mean, there's three I thought could go into a deck right now or make some sort of deck right now. The one I picked, though, is Act on Impulse. Just because I think it's my pick for Modern and Legacy just because of the Storm deck.
Okay, what does Act on Impulse do again?
So Act on Impulse is the, let's see, oh, I just had it, lost it. Act on Impulse is the one with the badass flavor text that says, you don't want to see what happens when I put on my goggles, something like that. It's the sorcery, 2 and a red. It says, exile the top 3 cards, it's an uncommon, 2 and a red, exile the top 3 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may play cards exiled this way.
You said because of the Storm deck, I can't really argue that, like, I can see it fitting in.
Seems legit to me.
It does.
Yeah.
Absolutely does.
I know some people asked me, including you, about Hushwing Griff. I just don't see it. I mean, I think that has its spot in maybe a control deck sideboard, like blue, white, red or something, but it's not, if you're talking death and taxes, I don't think you want it. We have too much that enters the battlefield, with ETBs.
See, I think, Hushwing Griff is more of a role player than like the format breaking card or, you know.
I think it's a sideboard card myself.
It's super good in
blue, white, red. And even then in that deck doesn't necessarily want to see it all the time because of Snapcaster Mage and or like Restoration Angel.
The deck that's excited for that card is like Hate Bears, like green, white, Hate Bears because it just frees up sideboard.
I don't know because so much of that deck enters the battlefield with blow up effects. I mean, Leonin Relic Warder, out of the board,
See, I have a buddy that plays Scream, I Hate Bears, and he doesn't play anything. He's playing like the Man of Denial, where you play like Lean and Arbiter and Ghost Corps.
I'm straight mono white, Death and Taxes, and there's just too much that comes in. Like, I don't even run Torpor Orb, so I wouldn't run this. Like, yeah. I'm with Angelo that it's Hushwing is like a sideboard.
It's literally, if you're
that's
playing
my,
white,
that's
you don't
my
play
best Torpor. Modern sideboard card, but I think the best modern card or one that may get modern play, like main deck, is maybe Act on Impulse. We'll see.
Okay, Mike. Best my modern
pick,
card.
My pick for best modern card is, funny enough, another uncommon. I chose Ulcerate, or as I'm going to dub it, Darkbolt, because for one black mana, it's an instant. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn, but you lose 3 life. In modern, life isn't really a big thing. So, you know, you never see like an Esper Delver in modern, because all you have for removal is a path and then things that cost 2 and 3 mana. Ulcerate just kind of takes over that Lightning Bolt position.
Plus, this, though, next to Bob can put you in a scary place, man. That's like very suicidal.
See, I don't know. I would rather this than like,
I don't know. I always like Suicide Black. I'll just say that right now.
Yeah. I mean, it seems also, I like this. I'm with you, man. I think this is a sick card. I like the name Darkbolt too. I'm gonna steal that one from you.
And then also, like with Bob, like those decks before would play Dismembered, so you would lose 3 off the Bob and then 4 when you cast it. So that's 7, yeah, as opposed to losing 1 and 3 when you cast it. I mean, the way I look at it is a slightly smaller Dismember, and Dismember changed the format, or, you know, Phyrexian Mana changed the format, but the fact that it's one black at instant speed to, you know, and it can even kill indestructible things, which is huge. I don't know, you know, how much it's indestructible in modern, but a 3/3 indestructible just dies to it, or, you know, say they have something out that turns their Mutavault indestructible, you can kill a Mutavault with it. You know, it's just, it's a super flexible removal spell with a slight drawback that you can get around. Plus, it's sweet with Snapcaster Mage.
Uh-huh. That I can't argue. Definitely sweet with Snapcaster Mage. Okay, so let's see. Word of me, huh? Exactly. I'm going to do the cop-out, kind of like Ryan did with the first one. I cheated? Dude, you two picked the Pain Lands. That's a cop-out. I copped out with this one.
That is not a cop-out. You asked me what I thought. The best.
So the best modern card is Court of Calling. Why? Because it's already fucking being used in modern. And it's already really good in modern. Like, why am I going to argue with the facts?
Boo.
Boo. No.
You were supposed to look within yourself.
I did, and I was like, Court of Calling's really fucking good.
And boo. They did switch the art up on
it. Did you pick the fucking lands, and you're going to ride my shit for picking an actual card?
Hey, the lands aren't, those aren't.
Incurrent. Those are obvious to everybody under the fucking sun.
But I said slash Nissa, though, so.
Well, I don't do the slash shit because, you know, I said pick one card and you always right. cheat that.
That's cool.
Can I do a substitute pick for you then, Angelo?
No, because I'm right.
Do you have a card do you have a card you could see going into sideboards or something like?
Sure, Void Snare.
What's Void Snare?
It's a boomerang for 1 mana.
It's my choice for best legacy card.
What color is that in?
1 blue.
It's blue. I believe it's also an uncommon. It might even be common.
It's common. Return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand for 1 blue.
And it's a sorcery.
But yeah, it's sorcery. That's yeah. I mean, but still, it's Court of Calling, man. Like,
but no one's played
saying any other thing than Court of Calling.
Speaking of Void Snare, though, we just had Disperse, which I believe drew you a card, right? And nobody played that.
No, Disperse was an instant for blue and a colorless that did the exact same thing.
Oh, okay. Didn't let you draw a card?
No.
Never mind.
I mean, I could also said negate. I mean, like, I have a hard time arguing with, like, results. I'm sorry. Like, you know, the best card in the set for that is going to be the card that we already know is good.
So I say, I'll call it a cop-out, but it's definitely a good pick.
Yeah, I'm the first to say it's a cop-out, but because it's a good pick.
For sure.
I mean.
So good call. Good call. No one's going to argue with you there. It's.
All right,
gonna give you shit about it.
But you sure as hell tried. So you picked Active Impulse for Legacy, right, Ryan?
Yep.
And Mike said Void Snare, which we just kind of went over.
Yeah, the Void Snare, the big thing, like we were talking about earlier with like Belcher with the Wish Board, like Burning Wish is a big thing in Legacy. So being able to have a wishable boomerang seems pretty good.
Yeah, it does actually. I like it. I do.
And what was your pick for Legacy?
I picked Waste Not. It just, like, Mono Black Control is going to have fun with it. It's, look, is it going to break the format? No. Will it see play? Yes. Will it make explosive things in Mono Black Control? Yes. Will it make you play things like Force of Will? Yes, if you're not already playing it. It's going, the unfair decks are not going to want to see a turn one waste knot.
See, I see this going right into either like you said, like a mono black, just devoted discard, or even in that Pox deck that we talked about earlier. Could you imagine the turn where you have Waste Not out?
Oh, trust me, I've already thought of it.
You play Raven's Crime, they discard a land, you get double black, you play him to Turok, and then they discard a creature and a spell. So for one mana, or for a mana and discarding a land, you just got them to discard three cards, you got a 2/2, and you got the draw card. Like, situations like that make me really hope this card does things. But then you have the situation where you draw three Waste Knots and no discard spells, and you're just like, why am I playing this stupid card? But that's Magic.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just, it's gonna see some play. I mean, yes, you can do the whole turn one, Dark Ritual into Waste Knot, into Thoughtseize / whatever one black mana you want to. If they accidentally drop the wrong thing into their graveyard, then you go and play him behind it. You can get ugly if the right hand comes to you, but man, I think that's going to be good. Who wants to do limited first? Ryan, you can do it because it's a copy.
Limited. Okay. Yeah. I went with Ulcerate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough, man. There's a lot of there seems like decent removal. You can name a ton of cards that kill things in this set. I mean, Lightning Strike is back. I mean, we got like things like Devouring Light, Clear Path. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of removal here, so.
The argument I have for backing you up on Ulcerate in Limited is like your next closest thing is a 5-mana instant in black. You know, it's 5-mana instant destroy target creature in black. So like, you have like low, like it seems like Wizards anymore. It's like, if you want like unsituational removal, it's going to cost 4, 5, 6 mana. If you want cheap, efficient removal, it's going to be conditional. Like, so the -3/-3.
But speaking of fucking black, Stab Wound is back, and that card's really sweet and limited too.
Not really. It's a rare or uncommon, so it's not nearly as good as it's going
to
be.
It's not going to be as nutty as it was before. You're probably not going to die to the double Stab Wound like you did the first time around. It is changed to uncommon this time around. You're right, but still, it's a sweet card and limited too. But I went with Ulcerate because it's just 1 mana, 3 damage. Pretty fucking efficient.
What about you, Angelo? What's your pick?
Oh, my pick shouldn't be obvious to anyone who's listened to me over the last few weeks. It's turned a frog, man. I mean, there's nothing that makes me happier than just looking at somebody's huge scuttling doom engine and going, nope, it's a 1/1, and then blocking it.
You failed on the turn to frog. When you cast it, you just have to read its flavor text. That's all you have to do. You don't have to say anything. You just rib it.
Yeah.
That was my pick as well. You kind of beat me to it on typing it in, but.
Dude, if you would have fucking picked turn to frog, I'd have made you change it.
You've been off the cast.
It was your card. You called it last week, so I had to find something else.
I've called it on 3 podcasts or 2 podcasts or something like that. Like, that's my card, man. Man, I love that card.
Send your turn to frog stands alone.
Yep, just send them to me.
There we go.
Right. What'd you pick?
My pick was, I chose a common because it's something you're going to be able to build around a little bit easier. I chose Triplicate Spirits, which is a new card. It costs white and 4 for a sorcery with Convoke. You put 3/1/1 white spirit tokens with flying onto the battlefield. I don't know if you guys have ever, I know, Angela, you've been playing some Vintage Masters. You know what Battle Screech can do, right? this just feels so much like Battle Screech to me. Like, you just go turn 1 guy, turn 2 guy, turn 3 guy, and then just makes 3 more guys, and then it just ramps up from there. And there's a lot of token generators in white. So I think it's going to be one of, like, maybe the white-blue or white-green strategy is going to be based around tokens. And just anytime you can shortly, 2, 3, 4 mana, get 3/1/1 flyers seems pretty powerful.
Yep. I mean, three flyers, 3 bodies in the air.
Yeah, if you can get 3/1/1s for 3, you're doing really good.
It has a very, what was the card from Lorwyn Block? Man, I'm blanking on card names tonight.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's black, white.
No, it's 2 colorless or white 3 times. Okay. So it's like triple white to cast and you get 3/1/1s. It has that kind of a feeling to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it has to me too.
Like, plus, the art is kind of creepy. I just looked at it and it's like potatoes with arms chasing someone.
Let's see. Does anybody here play EDH regularly?
Not really regular.
Okay, so no one here plays EDH regularly, so I guess I'll go first. Omnixilis, Unshackled, best EDH card. Why? Because I had to pick one, and Omnixilis is cool.
He's a badass legendary creature. I mean, he's certainly something you can do some twisted things with in EDH. You can grow him hella huge.
People like to draw cards in EDH, too.
And people like to search their fucking libraries.
That's right. I second you right on that. The search hate is going to be huge in EDH.
Yeah. People do like to search their libraries in EDH. So, yeah, that's why I went off Nyxalis. Ryan, what'd you pick?
Well, kind of a card that would hate to see on Nyxalis across from it. I went with Yissin, the Wanderer Bard. Let's see here.
That's a green Yissin. Word, right?
Yissin is the green. Damn, this is a long fucking list.
It's up at the top.
Yissin. Okay, he's two and a green. Legendary creature, human rogue. He's a 2/3. It's nothing, you know, too powerful or anything, but he has, two and a green, you can tap and put a verse counter on Yissin. That sounds so fucking lame. A verse counter. I put the verse counter on my Yissin.
Yeah, I'm just gonna call this dude Edward. Final Fantasy fans will get that.
Okay. Search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters on Yissin. Put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Yeah, I'm Nick shits on that, but it's like a weird birthing pod.
Yeah, it's like a weird slow birthing pod, which makes it perfect for EDH.
Well, and you don't have to sacrifice your dudes to move upward on the chain, so to speak.
Right, and then also you could do crazy things with like putting what's it called? Proliferate. You could double his, you know, add his tokens.
Oh yeah, and
stuff
three
like that.
Mana versus sacrifice, I think, is a fair cost. Is if we're comparing this to like birthing pod, like three mana sacrifice a creature seems pretty even.
This guy seems pretty good with doubling season too.
Yeah. Oh, here's a card I didn't see that's sweet for limited. Wall of Mulch.
Oh, Wall of Mulch is back?
Yeah, that's really good. I said that on Tap and Sack 2000.
Are you okay?
Happy about it. Yins were like, are you fucking trolling me? I'm like, no, it's Wall of Mulch.
Really, I am so excited.
The walls seem like they'll be very good in limited. I hate to digress back to limited. I'm sorry, Angelo, but yeah, the walls seem really good.
Why in the holy fuck are you apologizing to me for wanting to talk limited?
Sorry, dude. Well, I don't know. What do you think of the walls in limited? Do you think the cycle of them, like it's like E-Color has one?
I think Wall of Mulch is really good. The other walls are...
Don't draw you a card.
Yeah, they don't draw me a card. Exactly.
Like, I like Wall of Essence.
Yeah, Wall of Essence, the original art too.
I mean,
yeah.
I've used Wall of Fire, unfortunately. Like, I'm willing to admit that I've used that card in drafts before.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it, like, honestly, it, late game, it just kills whatever it blocks.
Does Wall of Essence replace Nyxalis Ram in the board against, aggro red?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Wall of Limbs, like, I would have rather seen, what the hell is that called? Wall of Blood in its place?
That one also had, like, a lifelink type effect, didn't it?
You paid life to make him bigger.
That's right.
I would have rather seen that in there, but, I mean, it's kind of... Eh.
We got some really good reprints, too.
Wall of Frost is amazing, so, yeah, I'd be happy to play that. And, let's see, what's the last wall here? You said Wall of Essence.
Wall of Fire.
No, I said Wall of Fire. Wall of Essence fire dealt combat damage. You may gain that life. Eh... I don't know that I'd ever run that. Let's be honest.
Like, and it's a good sideboard and limited if you got like a slow.
Yeah, I don't see me mainboarding this very often.
Is it me that thinks that this set is kind of hella lazy though in some of their reprints? Like Oppressive Rays and Oresco Swiftclaw were just in the last set. Like,
really, those are the ones you're going to complain about?
No, I mean there's a lot of reprints that we just saw. Like
the one I'm going to complain about is the Satyr.
Oh yeah, Satyr Wayfinder.
Satyr Wayfinder, like yeah. It literally just came out in the last set, and I'm like,
well, no,
okay.
The Satyr Wayfinder wasn't that Born of the Gods.
It might,
but still, last block.
I'm pretty excited about Dissipate being back. Yeah. Anyway, back to what we were talking. My choice,
yeah,
for Dissipate EDH card.
Too. Sorry,
cop
out. Got off subject. I got talking about limited, but yeah, the walls kind of seem right. Like the pickups in limited.
I'm gonna cop out on my EDH pick because everybody knows every EDH deck needs good board wipes. So Perilous Vault is probably the best board wipe in this set. It's 4-mana artifact that you can pay 5 and tap it to exile itself and all other non-land permanents. It's, you know, your colorless planar cleansing.
It's your Nivenrahl's Disc.
Yeah, it's every deck runs Oblivion Stone and Nivenrahl's Disc, and it's just another one of those effects, except that it exiles, which can get important because Buddy Mine runs a mono blue deck where he plays Nivenrahl's Disc with whatever the artifact is that makes all your artifacts indestructible, and then he has infinite Divinerals discs. So
sweet. Best art, Mike.
Best art, I chose Act on Impulse, which was Ryan's pick for Legacy, I think.
Right. We didn't talk about what the art really was. So.
The art is, as far as I know, the first time we've ever seen Chandra with her goggles on, which by itself is pretty cool. I think the flavor text lends a lot to the art, which might have bumped it up my scale. But if you look really close at it, you can see some sort of elemental shooting his hand off at something in the reflection of her goggles. And, the flavor text says, you don't want to know what happens when I put on the goggles. So it's like, all right, we know Chandra's ready to roll and you can see the reflection of what's going on in her goggles. And it's just awesome. I just love this art.
Sweet. Yeah. Ryan, what was your art?
I went with a beautiful piece here. Let's see. I went with Illusory Angel, which I think is a good card in its own right. Illusory Angel is 2 and a blue. It's a 4/4. The art is by Alan Williams. It has flying. I think it was in a plane chase set or something like that. So it's been, I don't think anyone's ever played it in Legacy or anything, but the art on
it. Yes, it was in Legacy for a while.
Really? Cause the art on it is spectacular. Props Alan Williams. I'm not familiar with your work really, but this is fucking cool. And it seems like a really good card that might see I could potentially see this in Standard going forward in Control. Like, it's a 4/4 flyer. Its only drawback is you can't cast it unless you cast another spell this turn, but I don't know how much of a drawback that really is in a deck that, you know, would want this.
Can untap 4 forests and then play it.
There you go.
Yeah, the art's pretty on it though. I mean, it's very pastelish, which is sweet. The one I chose because it is completely different than every other card in the set. As far as the art goes, and that's Profane Memento.
Okay, what is this?
It's an artifact for one, and it has this, like, feather and a gold skull sitting right next to it on top of, like, some tantric thing.
That is dope.
I really like this art. Like, it cried out to me. I was like, that skull is fucking wicked. And, you know.
It's crisp.
Yes.
It is very to the point and exact on what it wants to be.
It's like some sort of, like, I don't know, like, it says it's an angel's skull in the flavor text. So they've adorned it with some art, but seems very like Indiana Jones, like crystal skullish. Like, I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah. I like the fact that it has the angel's feather there because, like, you know, anybody who remembers the old artifacts that let you gain life when somebody played a white spell, angel's feather was that. And, you know, and this is basically what happens. It's like, okay, well, there's a skull next to it. So when something goes to the graveyard, you gain a life. If you can get the little hints behind it, like the picture can explain what this card does.
It's awesome.
I think it's really sweet art and that makes me happy. Best flavor, I went with hot soup because
it's don't touch the guy with the hot soup.
Yeah, that's why. Don't touch the guy with the hot soup.
Flavorful. Soup is really flavorful. Soup
is flavorful and the frickin' flavor text that just says coming through. I mean, if you've ever worked in a kitchen, you'll get it. Yeah, it's like behind coming through.
This is a dumb card. I don't know.
No, the card's bad.
I don't get flavor.
Dude, the flavor literally is from the flavor text to me. And it's just coming through. Cause if somebody has hot soup, you know, you don't want to get in their way.
So I didn't know we were judging flavor text.
It says best flavor. And I went, what is that stuff called? What was the first word you just said? Flavor?
Flavor.
Yeah, there you go, see. You didn't have to judge it for flavor text, but that's what I used to judge mine. So what'd you pick there, Ryan?
I went with a cop out. I went with the Soul Cycle. As far as flavor goes, it seems obvious. They each represent a plane in Magic's history. They all, like, okay, let's see. Let's, for example, take a look at Soul of Chandelar. Represents red. I mean, his abilities to dealing 3 damage, like, that's totally red's flavor. It's first strike. Chandelar seems like I don't know much about that plane or anything, but I'm assuming like Lightning Bolt was a card then. I don't know.
It was not, but you know, okay.
I don't think they've actually done a set based in Chandelar. They have done like video games based on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah.
No, it's absolutely flavorful. The souls are flavorful. I can't, you know, hey, they do, you know, harken you back to other times and, you know, it gives you a little bit of
It's a cop out though. It's a cop out, I know, but.
No, it's alright, man.
It seemed to be the easiest, like I think that's what they were going for when they thought of what flavor they wanted to represent the sets. They came up with these souls. I also, think while we were on the red one, that may be one of the two that's playable. I like that one, and I like the, Soul of Theros, but.
New Fraction is also really good. Anyway.
Yeah.
What's your favorite, flavor there, Mike?
My favorite flavor card, is, as soon as I read it, I closed my eyes and imagined it happening, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And it's Hornet Nest. It's a creature insect. It's a rare for green and two. It has Defender, and it's a 0/2. So you're like, man, what's up with this card? But it does what it is. Whenever it is dealt damage, you put that many 1/1 green insect creatures with flying and death touch. So I just pictured this guy with his giant sword and shield running up and hitting this hornet nest, and just all these bees come flying out and attack him. I mean,
I just thought of a rug deck with that, and is it Staticaster pinging hornet's nest every turn?
See? Oh. Decks are made here on Pit Imps.
Oh, that's nasty. Well, Chandra. I mean, you could Chandra that.
I don't know that I want to do three colors, but yeah.
No, you just Chandra it.
Yeah, you can Chandra it.
Or is Chandra of an opponent?
That Chandra is. You can go back.
It deals
Chandra one Nalar.
Player and one damage to up to one target creature that player controls. So you'd have to ping yourself. But you could ping yourself and the Hornet's Nest.
Or you could just use Chandra Nalar, but we're not in standard
at
that point. Okay, so
let's see. I do want to change my mind on best flavor. I'm changing it to Frenzy Goblin because of the flavor text. I feel like this has been said about Angelo before. That's what he lacks in stature, he makes up for with enthusiasm. He's told the ladies that a time or two. So.
Yeah.
Oh man, I gotta fuck with you when I can. I like that. I like the Frenzy Goblin. Is that a reprint?
Yes, it was from original Ravnica.
Yep.
That's sweet, and that flavor is sweet.
Just scrolling through some of these flavor texts, like Krenko's Enforcer, his flavor text is he just likes to break legs. Collecting the dead is a bonus.
Yeah. That one's funny. I think a clear path. These are all red, by the way, which is incidental.
Red usually has the best flavor text.
Why do guards on clear a path, why do guards always look surprised when we bash them, asked Rurik, and Thar responds with, I think they expect a bribe.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can go all the way back to, like, Lava Axe. It was so simple, but catch. So perfect. Catch. Yeah, exactly. Just,
I hate fanatic. New Lava. Speaking of Lava Axe, they fucked up on the new flavor text.
A strict, I think they've used that before, a strict upgrade over the Cinder Hatchet.
Yeah.
That's
classic red flavor text, Mog Fanatic. I got it.
Yeah. Oh, Mog Fanatic used to be good.
So the Frenzied Goblin though, I'm gonna nickname,
Okay, fine.
I'm little Ange.
So we're, whatever. you know what, dude? I'm serious, man. One of these days, I'm just gonna smack you with it, and you're gonna see what it actually looks like.
Hey, you're the one.
It's bigger than you think. It's a joke that I made. Right? I don't care.
You're the one that said it looked like a baby thumb, not me.
I never said it looked like a baby thumb. I said it looks like a gnat's eyelash. There's a difference, okay?
Angelo, when you get your pizza, that's when you thank him with the gentleman penis slap, you know?
You know what I mean?
There you go. So worst card. I'm sorry, Angelo. What's your worst
card? Hot soup.
seems good.
While flavorful, it is not a very good Magic card.
Yeah, while flavorful, it's something I will never play.
Not in Limited?
No.
No, make
I will
make
never play this.
What was the blue card played last Limited?
Crystalline Nautilus, which was terrible?
No. What is the one that made a dude unblockable that was a blue card?
Aqueous Form?
Yeah, that was played, so why
not? Yeah, you got the Scry. And you didn't have to pay 4 mana to put it on a creature.
Yeah, and as soon as my creature was targeted, it doesn't die. That part's important.
Yeah, I mean, it can't. To make a dude unblockable, though, is you never know, man.
Yeah, I'll never play it. Just being honest, if I play this, I'm in bad shape.
Yeah, it's a shit card. There's no denying that. It's an F.
Ryan, what'd you pick?
Let's see, worst card, another cop-out. Seems pretty obvious, the fucking bullshit staff cycle.
Wait. Weren't they? I could have swore I saw one of these show up, you know, in, like, a top 8 list.
Yeah,
one week.
One.
in the sideboard when Byrne was fucking destroying everything.
So it's obviously somewhat usable.
No, the staff.
Hey, you fuckers gave me hell over Mending Touch because it shows up in a couple lists because of some dumb shit like that. I'm going to give you hell back when you pick this card.
And it's a cop out by Wadsy to print five fucking cards because they're too lazy to fucking.
They do it every core set, man.
It's bullshit. This
every
staff.
Every core set they do it, though.
The staff is garbage. All the staffs are
this
fucking
card is not for you. It's for, like.
It's garbage. They're garbage. Admit it. You would never play this in a game of limited. You would never.
No, I have.
Oh, fucking crazy.
No, it's I have. In crap. Limited, for a fact.
Yeah, they're garbage. So.
In some decks, you just need a game like that.
Yeah, they're garbage.
Okay. I don't know, man. I've seen them in top eight lists.
Worst
just
cards.
Saying.
Worst cards.
So, Mike, I saved you for last because this is going to be the one that gets some people a little heated.
No!
Although I think you're pretty close to right.
Okay, Angela made the smart choice. Ryan made the safe choice, so I have to make the possible foot and mouth choice. So
I'm really shocked, by the way, Ryan didn't pick Jace for all the shit he talked about.
No,
just
because
saying.
I actually don't think that they would fuck up that bad on Jace. Like, sure, Chandra, Garrick, any other Planeswalker, I could see them, like, just fucking up.
Okay, no, I get you, man.
Okay.
So, I think Jace will.
That's fine. Mike.
All right, so I chose a mythic. I chose the Chain Veil, the 4-mana cost legendary artifact. Beginning of your end step, if you didn't activate a loyalty ability of a planeswalker this turn, you lose 2 life. So that right there, unless you're playing pretty dedicated to planeswalkers, it's just going to sit there and kill you. And then for 4 mana, you can tap it. And for each planeswalker you control, you may activate one of its loyalty abilities once this turn, as though its loyalty ability has not been activated. So essentially, it lets you double up on loyalty abilities.
That's
but,
for casuals, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's I mean, even casuals. Like, you're going to tell me you're going to sit there and hope that your planeswalker doesn't die so you don't die, and you still have to pay 4 mana? Like, play Rings of Brighthearth. That's just way better. If you're playing casual.
Yeah, I do think it's a terrible card, but I think the casuals will love it, and there'll be a Timmy somewhere, or somebody that tries to do something with it weird.
They were already on our page.
Yeah. I like it. It is, however, all shittiness aside, it is flavorful, because the veil, it is supposedly what, like, corrupted Garrick. It has some sort of magic abilities like this veil supposedly does. So.
I just think any time you would ever play this, there is a better card to do basically the same thing. Like, either Doubling Season or Rings of Brighthearth, you know, whatever you're looking to double the loyalty or double the ability, there's just cheaper and more efficient ways to do it. So
yeah,
I
let's say the same card cost 1.
If it costs 1, and how much to activate? Still 4?
4. But you can play that turn 1.
It would be terrible if you played it turn 1, because the next planeswalker you play would be Tibbled on 2, and you would still take 2 damage.
Yeah.
Right. So, best case scenario, you play, like, Jace Beleriand.
Well, or you could just go turn 4. I mean, if it's 1 mana, you can play it on turn 5 and activate it, like,
but yeah,
play it turn 1.
And then it would be possibly playable, because, like, say you play your, you know, Jace Architect of Thought on turn 4, turn 5, you play this and, like, double minus Jace or whatever. Or, you know, like, plus them twice to give all your guys, opponents guys -2/-2, like that. It's
now, do you have to use the exact same thing?
No.
Or can I plus and minus? Cause that, I mean, that's what I'd want
to
do.
For each planeswalker you control, you may activate one of its, no, it doesn't have to be the same one. So you could, yeah, like, you could, like, plus 1 Jace and then -2 Jace, or, you know, whatever.
That would seem sweet.
But for 8 mana to do it the turn you play it?
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. So, I'll go out on a limb. That's my pick for the worst card in this set. I think it's a trap if you try and play it in any kind of serious tournament. Sure, casuals have fun, play with it. You know, you could probably build your awesome 5-color Planeswalker deck and jam it in there, sure.
Yeah,
but
the one time you're at a Friday Night Magic and you get it to work, that's a story you'll have for a long time, but yeah, you're not gonna win anything good.
I wouldn't go so far as to call it the worst card in the set, but it's pretty awful.
I'm just telling you, if I open it in a pack, I'll be disappointed.
Oh, if it'll be in my sealed pool. Guaranteed, this will be the mythic I open in my sealed pool.
Right, and you'll be like, man, I wish that this was just like a foil Staff of the Death Magus or something.
Yeah, really, I absolutely just feel like I'd rather have a Death Magus.
I was hoping that we would get some sweeter artifacts, not this Chain Veil, not these staffs, when they gave us like Ornithopter and stuff, I was like,
dude, we got Urd!
Yeah, Obelisk of Urd, Soul of New Phyrexia, Perilous Vault, there's some really good artifacts.
Profane Memento.
Darksteel Citadel seems really good, especially especially with Nyssa. That seems fun.
I mean, the reprint on Juggernaut, that's going to be sweet and limited.
I hate the art.
Juggernaut.
Yeah,
I'm
not the art.
I love Kev Walker, so I like the style, but I don't like the art, if that makes sense.
I like the, honestly, my favorite Juggernaut art to this day is just the wall that's getting busted through from, like, what was that, Alpha?
It was either Alpha or Antiquities. I forget when it was first printed.
You know, it was Antiquities.
It's got like the big face on it or whatever.
Yeah, it's just like something coming through a wall. It's just perfect. It's like, that's what a Juggernaut is. And then they made that beetle looking thing and I was like, yeah, I can get used to this. And now this one, I don't know what the fuck this thing is.
Juggernaut is the giant pushing, the giant thing with the wheels and the spikes in front. It looks like it kind of has a face.
No, go back and look at the early ones.
That's the point.
I'm looking at Alpha, and it looks like there's a big fucking face on it, but it looks like a poorly drawn giant pushing a thing with wheels that has spikes on the front of it.
Okay, yeah. I would have to go back and point out the one I'm talking about then, because it might have been just a one set thing.
Yeah, it's a sweet card though for limited. Yeah, 5/3.
Oh,
five it's
insane
power.
In limited. It actually won a fucking world. It won the first worlds. Just saying that.
It was banned.
Is that because they didn't have creatures back then, or
no? Because it was a 5/3, man.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that just like crushing back in the day.
Creatures weren't good back then, like they are now. A 5/3 was like tough to deal with.
Very tough. Yeah.
Curt Ape was banned for a while. Let's leave it at that. Curd Ape was banned.
Curd Ape was banned a couple times.
Yeah. Apparently a 1-mana 2/3 is too good.
It almost got banned when it came back for, like, Time Spiral Block.
That was because it came right after Ravnica and you had the Shock Lands. Like, yeah. the only reason it was banned originally was because they thought it with Taiga was too good.
That was pretty good. For that era.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty good.
About the only thing quicker was like White Knight or something like that, you know?
I mean, I don't know if you remember Balduvian Horde.
Oh, I remember that card being like
$25 and it was like the most expensive card in this set, and like you look at it now and you're like, this card's fucking terrible.
Yeah, I remember one, I opened one and I took it to a shop and traded it in and got 2 Force of Wills for it. At a shop, so store credit was enough to get 2 Force of Wills off
golf
of the computer, right?
Golf clap. Well, that's going to be our time to put our foot in our mouth. Be sure to tell us exactly how bad we were, because I'm sure we punted a few. I'm sure we nailed a few right on the head, and I'm sure that somebody else has a different opinion.
It's a large set. I mean, it's hard. I mean, like, things like limited, it depends. Like, we tend to, at least I do, pick, like, removal spells. There's a lot of sweet creatures at the uncommon and common slots, like,
yeah,
this set, like, you know, it's hard to say, like, you know, what's the best necessarily in my...
It is, but that's what makes this fun, man. Because that's why I say this is when we put our foot in our mouth, because you're not going to hit them all.
Yeah.
You can't. And that's the fun part of this, so...
And, you know, we know the posse will give us crap for it, but they're not going to, like, think less of us. You know, it's just poking fun at ourselves at worst case.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see how they can think less of me anyway. But all in all, just, you know, real quick side tangent about M15 here before we move on. This is the best core set I have seen since forever.
M10?
I think it's better than M10. I have to play the limited to see how that plays out.
Say when Lightning Bolt was last?
Yes.
It might have been, yeah.
Okay.
But I have to see how the limited plays out to see how it truly stacks up against some of the other sets, but.
Yeah, like, you know, Alpha Beta aside.
Yeah, right. You can't count those. But the power in this set, you know, the new cards, dude, this set's good. Like, this makes me want to buy a core set.
Was Lightning Bolt in M11? That would be my only other argument.
I think it might have been. I know it was printed twice in a row.
Lightning Bolt was in M11. I think M11 might be better because it had the Titans. It had
Baneslayer
Angel.
That set was terrible.
Like I said, I didn't really play with it. I just remember the big cards. I don't remember the bad cards. So.
Yeah, see, you said Baneslayer Angel. First off, in M11, when Baneslayer Angel was around, it wasn't good anymore.
Yeah, because of Dismember.
Right. M10 was when it was just retarded. I'm sorry if I use that word politically incorrectly. Go fuck yourself. but the Titans, like... While I used them, the Titans were a mistake.
Right, but they were super powerful.
They
like,
were.
The argument in question is the most powerful. Like, the fact that you have Baneslayer, which was probably the best 5-drop at the time.
Is it the question, though? Like, I was saying just best set.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying most powerful.
Well, no, there is a lot of power in here, but it looks balanced.
Right. Yeah, this is probably the most well-rounded corset ever. Like, right. I will give that for sure.
There's a lot of new, neat stuff that, you know...
There's some cool old reprints that'll shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, I want to play with this set, and that's just... That's different for a corset. Orion, you haven't been around for a lot of these corsets, I know, but you've seen a lot of bad fucking corsets. Ryan?
Bueller?
Did Ryan
leave? Oh, damn, it dropped me for a second. Am I getting, hear me?
Bueller? Yeah, we hear you now.
Oh, yeah, no, I was trying to say, some shitty corsets, but, you know, I came on, M12 was already out, so I came on at Avacyn, so I've only seen, like, the releases of, like, M13 and 14.
You poor man. M12 was a fun limited format, but it wasn't the greatest.
Is he really a poor man? I still think 13 and 14 are way better than like 7th and
8th. Yeah, I don't. 13, what did 13 give us outside of Thragbus? I don't remember.
Well, 13 at least had had Thrag Tusk. I don't know. Like, I think 13 and 14 were both not that good. I think there was like two or three cards in each one.
14 was certainly better. I mean,
8th edition had Wrath of God, so.
Got Mutavault. I think M14 was much better than M13.
Really? I thought M14 was the worst core set they've put out since like M9. Since like 9th edition, or maybe 4th edition even. It was that bad to me. Like, it's just, I never wanted to play with it. It's like, it had Mutavault in it. That was it. It had Mutavault in it. That was it.
Scavenging Ooze is a good one. I don't know. There's probably things we're not thinking of right now, but Lifebane Zombie, pretty good.
I don't know. I think that was a terrible M set. It just did nothing for me.
Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, M set. This one, however, seems like a lot of fun. This seems like a really good core set.
Yeah, I really am looking forward to cracking some packs of this and seeing how she sleeves up. And, you know, hey, there's a lot of, I see a lot of standard cards in it. Not 3 or 4 or 5. I see a lot of standard cards in this set, and that'd be good.
And what, the card that pisses me off the most that I see, it's like Wizards wants us to explore these new archetypes. They say, hey, we're throwing you some new shit, enchantment creatures, all these new things, like, here's a new archetype potentially. And then what do they fucking reprint this set after they just reprinted the dumb Strive card that does the same thing, but, you know, one, unless you strive, is fucking back to nature. I can't believe they printed that.
I think that's kind of the, in case things get bad, here's your reset button. They did that a lot. Like, the core set after Mirrodin Block, they put Shatterstorm in it, and just different stuff like that. Like, it's kind of a, I think we might have possibly had a problem, so just in case, here's this.
So, no one has figured out the enchantment deck that Wizards is worried about, basically.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? It's better for them to be proactive than reactive, because, like, it took forever for Kotaki's Wars Wage to get there.
Right, or what was the other one for fairies? Volcanic Fallout. Like,
yeah. Great Sable Stag kind of stemmed it a little bit, but really Fallout.
Just now, like, figuring stuff out, and this blows up a lot of the mono black aggro deck. Like, it's just a 2-mana blowout. Like,
and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
I mean, if it does blow up a lot of the, I know, like, you know, it blows up connections. But that's going to be gone in a few months anyway.
See, I much rather would have seen, like, Pyroclasm at that slot instead. Like, I miss Pyroclasm.
I do miss Pyroclasm. I'd rather see Stone Rain in its slot, but, you know.
I got a playset of betas that are collecting dust, and it hurts my feelings.
Yeah, I can understand your feelings. Okay, Ryan, what you been up to, bro?
Working on this Nia Walker's Brew, testing out some things, and the usual. Looking forward to pre-release this weekend. I'm hopefully going to hit 2 or 3. So I'm already signed up for 2 of them on Saturday. So should be a fun day. I'm not doing the midnight bullshit or anything. So
yeah, I might do the marathon. I might start at midnight and just go till midnight the next night.
That's how many pre-releases?
Probably 3 or 4. 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Eh. Well, you know, it's crazy, but it could be good fun, too. You been up to anything else, bro?
Is attached to a sweet Mexican restaurant, so that could be pretty good to pull
there. That could be dangerous, too, man. You could be in the middle of the game and got to go hit the fucking porcelain god, like, immediately, and you're like...
You would become a porcelain legionnaire. You might even lose 2 life to cast that spell.
I need a timeout!
I mean the usual, nothing new or too exciting, working on some brews, about to go back, hit the drawing board with a few things, and gotta pick a winner for the people that did send and post to the last deck challenge that I posited on the Facebook page. So
okay. Mike, what you been up to?
Well, Sunday I scrubbed out of a PTQ. That was awesome.
Where was that?
It was in, like, greater Toledo area, like suburbs of Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, okay, because I saw somebody put up where it was in Sylvania, and I was like, it was in PA?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a Sylvania in every state in the Midwest.
Well, Pennsylvania is what I was thinking, and I'm like...
Right. Yeah, it was northwestern Ohio. It was like 6 miles from Michigan, so.
Oh, holy Christ.
Yeah, we woke up early, made the 2.5 hour drive up there from Dayton where we are. And, I played Jund, and, something I didn't anticipate was a Tron heavy metagame. So picking Jund was not the right call.
Nope.
Two of my three losses were to red green Tron. I managed to beat a mono blue Tron, and I beat a Splinter Twin deck because I got the ultimate, fake out on him the first game. And then drew like a lucky bastard the second game. First game, he like turn one Gitaxian Probe and sees that I have a Abrupt Decay in my hand. Well, the next card I draw is a Slaughter Pact. So on turn three, I tap out to play a Liliana of the Veil and, you know, just plus her up. And then he goes into turn Pestermite or whatever, and I'm like, I got him. And I'm like, all right, what's your target? So he untaps one of his lands. And then on his turn, he just untaps, draws, slams the land, and then slams the Splinter Twin. And I just point that Slaughter Pact at his guy. And just the look on his face of, that's a card that I forgot about. And then game two, he's got 5 cards in his hand, and he's stuck on 3 lands. During my draw phase, he casts Vendilion Click, and he sees another Abrupt Decay, so he clicks it away, and he's real excited about it. And then I draw off the click, and I hit Slaughter Games. So I just tap my 4 lands, play Slaughter Games, and name Splinter Twin, and he had 2 twins and 2 Pestermites in his hand. Ooh. So, yeah, he was a little upset about that draw. So, and then my third loss was a very, very close matchup with Malirapod, and it came down to, like, if I would have drawn a Lightning Bolt my last 4 turns, he was dead, but I couldn't draw it, so.
Eh.
But that's variance. So, but yeah, I went 2-3, had a buddy who played red green Tron, went 6-2, got 13th place. So we had a couple guys do pretty well, but a couple that did pretty crappy.
That's cool. I was really hoping you were going to come on here and tell us about how you've qualified for the Pro Tour.
Oh, trust me. I wanted to do that more than anything in the world, but I just chose the wrong deck for the room.
It happens, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll happen.
Gets you sometimes.
So I've been busy. Whether I wanted to be or not. First off, it was the 4th, so, you know, things got blown up in my neighborhood. I don't know what the laws are in the states you guys live in, but I know in PA, well, actually, I do know the state, Mike's state's laws. But in PA, like, it's illegal to light off fireworks. Unless you are licensed.
Oh, we can't do it at all here.
In the 4th of July, like, well, because we are actually one of the largest manufacturers of fireworks in the world. Like, we have Zambelli International right up the road from us, and they, like, do the 4th of July for fucking Washington, D.C. So, like, you know, there are people who have licenses.
In Ohio, we have Indiana and PA on either side that are huge, because Indiana does, like, Chicago's fireworks and different stuff like that.
Yeah, but you can just go in your backyard and blow shit up. No one says anything.
If enough people call the cops, people say so, but...
Yeah, but...
Drive across the border, right across the border into Indiana is a huge firework warehouse. And that's where everyone in Illinois goes.
Yeah, I have to go to Ohio to get mine.
See, I remember when I was a kid.
I'm here, but I don't know. 5-0 sits on the other side of the state line and just
waits. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my dad would go out and buy fireworks out of some dude's trunk, and he'd come home with, like, these giant steel pipes and shoot, like, giant mortars off in our alley behind our house. So, like, I have very fond blowing thing up memories of fireworks. So.
Yeah, but my neighbor, he decided that he was going to go get himself licensed.
Oh,
so my weekend was like, you don't get to sleep every day, just blowing shit up. And it's just like, fuck me. I did get a hell of a show, but fuck me. I didn't get any sleep because of it. Cause literally, like, over my house, mortar balls are going off, you know, and it's just like, well, I might as well go sit outside because I am not going to be able to crash. But, yeah, so there was that. There's also, I brought this up, fuck, it's probably a few episodes ago, at least over a month ago. Adam Wilson's wife and him, they're expecting a baby, and they, Adam made up these mock-up cards, you know. They weren't actual, like, cards. It was just something he did on the computer. And that was how he described they were getting, that they were going to have a baby.
Yeah, it was like the baby token or something.
Yeah, well, behind the scenes, because we didn't want his wife to find out, I got a hold of Les down in New Zealand, and he made Adam these cards. And Adam knew they were coming, and when they showed up, Adam handed them to his wife to open, and I guess she about flipped her shit when she saw them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like when Adam something something taps his wife's name something something, put a 03 baby in the play.
Put a demon encounter inside of her egg.
No, he tapped it, and then they put the 03 in, because he tapped it.
He tapped it, so he put the sperm in.
Yeah, he tapped that, so then now he got a baby. But yeah, he actually has the cards made up now, and you know, they're sitting at his house, and that's a nice little reminder of, you know, the baby, realistically. You know, people keep the sonogram, and this is something that they can keep right beside it.
I'd like to think a kid somewhere just learned how babies are made.
You're going to get a lot of angry letters from parents. Like, my 8-year-old came up to me and said, so one day I'm going to put a semen token inside of an egg.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a very child-friendly podcast anyway. So
no, I don't think so either. That. I do put the
premise. I'd like to hope, though, that somewhere out there.
Yeah, also,
shit out of somebody.
Portland. I was going to Portland. Everybody remember I was going to Portland? I had my money saved up, my money sitting aside, I'm going to Portland. And then my co-pilot, Mr. Buttercup, gets a hold of me and says, I can't do it, man.
Were you guys gonna fly or drive?
Gonna drive. I was gonna fly. See, here's the deal, I was going to fly. And flying out there was gonna cost me about $685. Which, I was going to buy the ticket. That's fine. This was 4 or 5 months ago. And anybody who's ever gotten a plane ticket, it doesn't matter if it gets a day closer to the date, it goes up in price. Well, yep. I was going to get my ticket, and then Dave gets a hold of me and goes, hey, man, I'd love to go, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, you want to drive? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Well, that cut my, I figured out the fuel cost on that, and it was only $300 to get there and back, a person, rather than me spend six and a half to fly out. And I was like, I could do the drive. Like, I have no problem driving long distances. I actually enjoy it.
Hell of a drive.
It is. But when he pulled out, I reached the point where it's like, okay, now my budget that's set aside no longer covers this.
Right, because you spent the excess money because you're like, I don't need it anymore.
It is Portland.
It is in, it's
next weekend?
August 7th?
Yeah, August 7th.
Yeah, it's a month from now.
Yeah.
Drive through, pick me up, let's go.
You're out of your mind.
You still don't want to drive?
Well, at this point, I can't.
Okay.
Because something else popped up over the weekend. V4.
Oh no.
I hopped on to play V4 the other day, and I'm sitting there in a draft, and it keeps disconnecting on me and reconnecting and disconnecting and reconnecting. And I'm just like, fuck. And I file for compensation. They give it to me. And I load back up, like, you know, a day later in a slower hour time. Because, you know, people who play will understand that there are certain times when the server's fuller than others. And
yeah, it's like AOL in the 90s.
Yeah, when you get on there and the server's not as full, it actually functions a lot better. So I'm like, okay, this is the time that I want to be on here. And the draft still didn't work right. After about 10 minutes of flowing correctly, it started kicking me off, popping back on, kicking me off, popping back on. And I'm just like, fuck. So basically I started looking at the stats. You know, what do I need to play this? Even though obviously I met him or wouldn't have, you know, basically let me play. I meet the requirements, but just barely. So this means I have to upgrade my computer. I picked up a little bit of extra RAM over the weekend. I picked up a new hard drive. I haven't got a chance to really test it out fully yet, but if this doesn't work, I'm going to have to get a new processor and motherboard, or just get a whole new computer. And that sucks. The truth is, like, if for some reason this doesn't work and I can't play, we may go on hiatus for a while, because I'm not going to be that guy who sits on here and presumes to tell people how they should be playing this game when I don't play myself. Because unbeknownst to a lot of podcast listeners, a lot of podcasters do exactly that. Like, they never play, but they come on every week and talk about Magic. Well, I'm not going to be that guy. We would never disappear forever. It would just be until I got shit right. Luckily, the shirt's fired, so I'm going to receive a check from that. Also, luckily, I have the money that I'm not spending to go to Portland. So I'm very close to what I would need to purchase this stuff. You know, so it doesn't look like it's as doom and gloom as I thought at one time it was. But it's still not good. You know, like,
you, Kevy, and Slick were going to be an epic team, though.
We was. Dude, I'm very disappointed about me not going to Portland, but.
Well, they were going to be an epic team, just not at Magic. They were going to be an epic team at a bar down the street.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I, you know, and I always, I'm not going to lie, that part always bothered me. Like, that, those are my teammates, and they didn't care if they ever made it there. And, like, I even told them, like, guys, when I go to GPs, I kind of want to try to win. They're like, there's no way we're winning. It's the week after a Pro Tour. And so, yeah, yeah, it doesn't mean we can't try.
Well, I mean, the EV's not there, is it?
It's not really there at any GP, but you go to GPs to win.
That's why.
When you walk into a room and there's 2,000 people there, the EV's not good. I mean, the EV on getting to day two is not good. You know what I mean? It's like, I gotta go X2. How many rounds are we playing? Oh, 9. Fuck. You know?
7-2 is rough.
Yeah, it really is.
And then you have to, like, win out to make top 8. Yeah. GPs, you have to be either really, really good or have, like, the deck to... Yeah.
And if you go in without 3 buys, it makes it a lot rougher. The more buys you have, the lot easier it is to do it.
I'm so glad they're doing away with that.
They're not doing away with it. They changed it.
I do like the new
year. I don't think you can get 3 anymore.
You can't if you're
platinum. You have to be like a platinum.
You have to be a platinum pro, yeah.
But still, like
nobody.
The fact they changed the planeswalker points from seasonal to year long, that helps a lot of people too. Cause like, it was rough to get, what was it, 300 or 350 planeswalker points in 4 months for a lot of people. If you just go to FNM and play, you're not going to get there. Like, you have to play in PTQs.
Now you'll get
to buys.
I used to get my buys literally just from going to GPs.
I should do away with them.
Yeah, if you go to like a PTQ and a GP, you probably had your 2 buys for the season.
Yeah.
But like now, you know, you could go to like a GP in the spring and then just play FNM through the summer, and then come fall, you'll have your buys, you know.
You literally could just show up at every FNM all year long, and you're going to have a buy at the end of the year, guaranteed.
Right. You'll at least have one buy. Right. Which
I don't know.
Yeah.
You get like 15 points for a 4-round FNM or whatever.
If you win out, you have to 4-0 a lot of FNMs.
But still, even like participation, like you probably get what, 7 points if you go 2-2 or something like that. 7 times 50 is what, 140? Yeah. Like that's halfway there.
FNM is just one participation point.
Right.
So,
but then you get 6 points for going
2-2. So that's like average outcome. You know, you have 140 points. That's halfway to what you need for a buy. So if you, you know, spike a couple and then maybe go to like a GPT and a PTQ, you're there. You know, like it's, you don't have to be the best player to get buys anymore. You could just be the consistent player and get buys, which is what I think it should be. They should reward people who go out every week and put in the effort
instead of everybody on their product.
Right. Instead of people who, you know, sit around and then they just go and spike a GP. Or, you know, do real well at GP and just earn a ton of points. And like, okay, I got my buys for the rest of the season, you know.
Yeah, my one complaint with this is the 3 buy thing.
Yeah, like I...
Like, platinum players don't need it. They deserve it, but...
Right, the reason they... I'm not sure, you guys probably know this, but the reason they switched it was to shorten the tournaments, because when you had everybody with 3 buys, it was just like you had like 400 people come in round 4, and it just made the turnover times that much longer. So by taking 80% of those and cutting them down to 2 buys, you basically cut out that, you know, that huge bulk coming in. So yeah, I understand why they did it.
500 people come in round 2, you'd have 200 people come in, because that was that weird spot. And then at the end of round 3, you'd have another 400 people come in, and it's just like...
Right, and then after round 3 is usually when people start dropping out because they have 3 losses.
Yeah.
So it kind of mitigates, you know.
Am I the only one here that thinks they should just say fuck buys and do away with it? Like, I fucking hate buys. I don't...
I'll tell you what.
Play out. You don't get buys in the playoffs of any other sport.
Football?
Yeah, you do football. There's first round buys.
Football, the wild card. But I mean, like, you don't go into, like, a best of 7 series and, like, start with, like, a 2-0 lead on your opponent. Like,
this isn't a best of 7 series, though. You sit down and you say best of 3.
So, I don't
think there should be some reward for people who play all the time, man.
Right. Like, have you ever had a buy at a GP, Ryan?
There's other ways to reward players without buys.
Have you ever been to a GP, Ryan?
No, I have not played in a GP.
Okay. As I say, once you play with a buy, you appreciate it. Because if you get the sleep-in special, you don't have to be there at like 8 in the morning.
That's cool, sure. That's cool. I think there's ways to reward players. You can do things that reward the players that play a lot. But when it comes to buys, like, I just don't like it, man. Like, starting the day 3-0, that's just giving, that's like a huge unfair advantage to somebody that
It is, but...
But look at how many pros start.
You're so good at cards. If you play Magic so much and you're so good, why do you need a buy?
Well, it's a game of variance. I mean, look how many pros start with three buys and then go 3-3 drop. You know, like, it happens all the time. The thing is the fact that, you know, because there are so many different outcomes, the three buys is probably the best incentive they can offer you to do well, because it literally, instead of having to win, you know, nine rounds with all this variance, it cuts it to six.
I think they'd rather have money. Pay them bigger appearance fees to show up to these events. Fly them to these events.
Yeah, like the top
level. They have more than some buys.
But the difference is you have 1% of your players that are in platinum.
It's a cheap, money-free way to reward your top players. It's James.
Right, exactly. It's low investment for them, but, you know, it's higher outcome for the players to get it. Like, it's a good, like, I don't know, compromise between the two parties.
It makes for an uneven playing field. Like, the playing field should be level. Everyone should go into a GP with the same record.
See, I like the reward system, man. I like being able to just, you know, say, look, I did well in my last two GPs. I just didn't, you know, quite crack it. So, you know, I get a little bit extra because I'm the one who's traveling and spending out all this money.
Yeah, give these guys more money. Give these platinum players more
money.
Okay,
well, not even the platinum player, the grinders. Who do travel and spend all this money following Magic around, they deserve something too.
The platinum players aren't their target. The target is those people that have two round buys, because think about it. If you have to spend, you know, $100 in gas and $300 on a hotel, you know, that's $400 you have in. You have to like top eight to make that back. Well, if they give you two free wins, it makes that top eight easier. So you're more likely to come out. So you're more likely to spend money at the event, buy cards, et cetera. It's an incentive. It's not a reward. It's more like if you practice at this game and do, you know, well, not necessarily good, but if you do well, you know, we'll give you a little kickback for that long trip you just made, or for the time you're taking out of your weekend to come and play. You know, like I said, it's not the best case scenario, but I think it's the best that they can give us.
I've always liked it.
I want them to bring the player rewards back, but that's just me. I want full art Cryptic Commands mailed to me.
Yeah, so do I. I love that, but the cost that Wizards had to have spent on that was unreal. Yeah, but to see, no Portland, the computer problem, but thanks to everybody who, has gotten a hold of me and they wanted to like give me money and stuff. Like, I appreciate that, but I have this stupid pride thing in me that just does not like just taking money off of people for nothing. That's why I was like, just buy a shirt, man. Then the worst case scenario, you get a rag to wash your fucking car with, and I feel like I gave you something and you gave me something.
And it's a sweet rag with an awesome, awesome logo.
Right. The shirt, by the time you hear this, will no longer be for sale. I actually think by the time we're recording this, there might be like, at this point, like 12 minutes left to order them.
Really? Because I was hoping to order another one or two, maybe as prizes.
Yeah. Well, you better get on there now. If they're still even open. I don't know if they are. Wait, I think they go off 2:00 tomorrow morning. So you got like 4 hours, Ryan. But yeah, thanks to everyone who did order one, because they did fire. So we have shirts coming and they're fucking awesome. And yep. I can't wait. I got some shout outs. Let me give a shout out to Ruben. He understands why. Yeah. Let me give a shout out to Adam Wilson, who got those cool fucking cards, and to Les. And this shout out comes from me and Adam. He asked me to give that to you as well. Let me give a shout out to, Ferret. Ferret sat down with me for a good half an hour on Skype, maybe even an hour even. And we really like hammered down what I needed to do to get this computer upgraded before I took the nuclear option of going and buying a whole new fucking computer. He designs computers and stuff like that. He knows what he's doing, and I think he found a way for me to do this a lot cheaper than I originally anticipated. So thank you, Ferret. Big shout out to you. I need to give an anti shout out this week to Buttercup.
Poor Buttercup.
Bastard. Oh well, you know, I understand his situation too. Money just wasn't right, and he wanted to let me know a little earlier, but you know, like when it first happened, I put it out on Twitter. Hey, anybody that wants to go, let me know now. And I didn't hear anything back for a few days, and the computer thing kind of just smacked me in the face, and I'm like, God, the fucker. But yeah, those are going to be my shout outs this week. Ryan, you got any shout outs?
Just to the posse, man. The new members there. Let's see. Damn, we got a lot of new members, man.
We do.
William Schaefer, Travis McFarlane, Blaine McDowell, Jared Detweiler, David Deering, Doug Lyle, all these in the last week, man. Timothy Weeks, Alex Jester, damn y'all. Keep them coming. That's what's up. So welcome everybody here. Glad to have you.
Mike, you got a shout outs, brother.
First off, shout out to you guys, Angelo and Ryan, for inviting me back on. I know you guys don't have just random fans, posse members on a lot. You did your 10 series, but you know, I was, saw that you posted that Ryan was a little late last week. So I just hopped on Twitter and I was like, hey, if you need somebody, I'm here. And you said, bring you on next week. And I was, you know, so it's awesome for you guys to have me on. I had a blast as usual.
Yeah, no problem. Ryan actually wasn't late. His Skype was.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, that happens from time to time.
and then shout out to the posse, of course, you know, best family in Magic. You guys, you know, keep me entertained all day on Facebook, posting random deck ideas, just random musings. Best group on Facebook, best group in Magic. And then shout out to Wizards R&D for putting out an amazing core set. Like, I'm so excited to play Limited. I'm so excited to see the changes in Standard. I mean, this is definitely a way to get us geared up and ready to play some more Magic. And it kind of lessens the blow that we don't get the new block until the fall. You know, sometimes you see that core set and you're like, oh, I gotta play this for 3 months. But this, you know, I think they put enough emphasis and enough work into it to make it really exciting.
Do you think that, as far as lands go, do you think in the next block or set, they'll give us the, like, allied colored, pain lands?
That's a possibility. I don't, like.
The rumor, and this is a rumor that I've heard, you know, a couple people spew out there, is, somebody from WotC was seen talking to a Star City Games representative at a GP, and his direct words were, sell your Onslaught fetches.
Yeah, that just sounds like...
Look into that however you want, but if you look, the Onslaught fetches have dropped in price.
Well, yeah, the conspiracy.
Maybe.
What I'm thinking is, why would they not print... Have they ever done this in Magic history where they haven't printed like a full cycle where they've just given us like enemy colors of something?
Yeah, Innistrad.
Really? Innistrad was just enemy colors?
Yep. Enemy colored buddy lands.
Oh yeah, Clifftop Retreat.
Scars of Mirrodin was only the allied color fast lands.
Yep, they do this all the time.
Like, it just recently, I think M14, they made the announcement that they're gonna try.
Why would they do that? Does that make things unbalanced? To me, that would seem like it would make things unbalanced.
Well, at the time with the, like, Innistrad, you had the on-color buddy lands already in the core set, so it, like, finished that cycle. And then in, like, Scar's block, you still had the, Zendikar fetch lands, which were enemy, so it kind of balanced out that. Like, they kind of try and make it...
fetches. Or the Zendikar fetches are the enemy ones you just said. So we Onslaught would be the ones that...
That's Polluted Delta, Flooded Strand.
The buddy ones.
Foothills, yeah, the allied colors.
Okay. Not the marsh pass I want.
The thing I'm hoping for, and I've got my fingers crossed, is that it's enemy colored, man lands. That's what I want out of the cons block. I know I'm asking for a lot, but I just want a blue-green man land.
I like it.
That would be sick.
It is time.
Just make it 5 mana for a 3/3 trampler that if it hits your opponent, you draw a card.
Black, white, ooh.
Black, white, give it lifelink and death touch.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I'm liking it.
Red, give it vigilance and first strike. You know, I mean, just do something here. Like, cause we had those ones in World Wake and they were awesome, but now we need the other half.
We do. We absolutely do. I'm still crying for the Bosk lands.
Yeah.
Which I don't really know what they're called, but Murmuring Bosk was
Murmuring
a forest
Bosk
that could tap for two different
land.
Yeah, it was a forest, but it could tap for white and black, and I love that.
Doran is still like one of my favorite decks in Modern. So
yeah, he's always going to be one of my top 5 cards. Just is. He's I've got.
But yeah, we'll call them the wedges, the wedge basics.
Okay, yeah.
It's not a shard, it's a wedge, right?
Yeah, so, I just call them Bosk lands.
Right.
Man, I really took us off on a tangent here. I'm sorry, guys. I just...
Isn't that like the subtitle in every show?
Pitters? Yeah, Ryan takes us off on a tangent.
Show? Yeah.
Yeah.
My bad. Yeah, so I didn't know that about the lands. I just got a little bit of a history lesson. I guess I never really looked at them that closely and been like, oh, we're missing,
Oh yeah, it's happened a bunch of times. Yeah,
like I said, they typically planned it that within the 2 blocks, you have a 10 set of enemy and allied. But, I think M15, they actually made an announcement that in every block, you're gonna have the full 10.
So, I think I got used to like the shock lands, how they did the full, like thing.
And then the temples, they did
the guild gates,
10.
And then the temples, like yeah, the full 10.
Yeah, that was a recent, like the only other time I can ever think that there was a full 10 was like 10th edition. I think they did all the pain lands in 10th edition.
Yeah, but go back and look at
original. That's funny. Why, I wonder why then we didn't see or haven't seen more 3-color decks.
Because the lands aren't that good.
That's another one they could print in cons, is the wedge lands. Like, you had in Shards of Valar, you had, like, the Jund land.
Oh, Christ, I don't even want to see those again.
Come on. Vivid lands.
I'm with Angelo.
Yeah, Vivid lands. Those are fair. They didn't break the format and make five-color control really good.
Yeah, with Onslaught fetches dropping, though, that is kind of interesting. Like, SCG has seemed to have been in the know before.
I'll tell you what.
That's fishy, but people don't be pissed off if it comes true that they don't, you know, reprint them or whatever.
There's definitely some sort of leak in WotC, though, because, like, the whole Bitter Blossom thing, when it got unbanned, they were moving up before they got unbanned. And it was more than just, like, people specking on it. Like,
they hit,
like,
$60. Yeah. They hit $60 before, right, like, the day before the unbanning, the day of. $60.
Like, if there are rumors floating around, I wouldn't just dismiss them. I would think about it a little bit before you just ignored them.
Yeah, plus, you know what? Modern needs it. Modern doesn't have friend, and they do want to help Modern out. And they do not have the friend fetches.
Wizards is obviously willing to help Modern with, like, you had Thoughtseize reprint, Mutavault, now this set you got Court of Calm.
It's not really that old that it's not in Modern.
It is not in Modern.
That would have been 2002 when Onslaught was printed?
Yep.
Give or take, I was in high school, so it's been a while.
Yeah, a long fucking time ago. Yeah, Ryan, they're not legal. Yeah. Contact info, Mike, go.
You can find me on Facebook in the Pidims group if you're part of the posse. If you are not part of the posse, you should join.
The sucker in the Jets hat, right?
I'm the sucker in the Jets hat with the Jets jersey. At least I'm wearing Chad Pennington jersey, so it's out of date, so people think maybe
that's
I'm an old
Jets worse.
Chad Pennington.
What are you trying to be, like, a football hipster? It's like ironic that you're wearing a Chad Pennington shirt.
Like Pennington, I felt like he got a bum deal up there and, like, never was able to develop. Like, I thought that he, like,
he's a Jets quarterback. That's what they do to all of them.
He was throwing to Randy Moss at Marshall. That's the verdict. So
they let him get killed for 3 years and then they say you're not good enough. That's what they do in the Jets.
I thought he never got, like, I thought he should have been much better, that he wasn't coached, that I just feel like he was, like, way behind.
He was there with probably the best coach the Jets have had in the last 20 years, and that's Bill Parcells. But the truth is, I grew up a poor kid, so I got a jersey about every 7 or 8 years, so that's why I was wearing the Pennington jersey.
But I fully understand that, trust me.
If you're not in the posse, join the posse. But if you want to contact me outside of Facebook, you can reach me on Twitter. It's mhardy, H-A-R-D-Y 1987 on Twitter. Typically, I'm checking it about every hour, so if you feel the need to talk to me, I'm always there to answer.
Ryan, if people want to get a hold of you, how would they do so?
I'm at BroTheYan on Twitter. Hit me up. I'm at 818. Keep the follows coming. And the Facebook page, of course. Horse is a horse, of course. The Facebook page, that's where it's at. Also, should you venture there, brainstormbrewery.com. You can listen to us there as well. That's a good spot.
Yeah, I actually have to start uploading the show myself to that site.
Sweet. Well, that'll be probably...
It does not speed it up at all.
Oh, never mind then.
Because it actually links through MTGcast. But anyway, it's just the fact that I gotta start doing it. So that's kinda, I don't know, it's extra work to do, but it does take some stuff off of Marcel's place, so that's good. If you want to find me, you get on me at Gonksu on Twitter, it's GANKSUOU. Same thing on, Magic Online when I'm finally back on there. You can also find me this week at least, and probably next on MTG Bro Deals, cause I am 3/4 of the way through an article, and I will be finishing it up, sending it in tomorrow. And it is my top 10 cards.
3/4 deep into an article, huh?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been writing and, you know.
Did you at least buy the article a drink first?
No. No, fuck that. I'm just trying to win a race and go to bed.
That's terrible. Love making should not be seen that way. That's a shame.
You're not married, are you, Ryan?
No.
After you're married and have kids, it's literally a race. You just hope to God it happens.
Yeah. I mean, half the time it's like, I can do it quicker myself. Leave me be. Dude, I'm telling you, Ryan. But, you can find me. Yeah, we'll just go with that. Oh, yeah, pitimpodcast@gmail.com. Long
send
form.
Send us emails.
Yeah, send us emails. I like questions and stuff.
And as you saw today, they'll be answered on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll read them. I mean, I don't care. They can be hate mail. Actually, I want some hate mail. I want someone to go, you're a fucking piece of shit, so I can just read that on the air. But then again, that's just like listening to Ryan talking to me, so.
I thought all hate went to Jack at MTG Cast. Wait, wrong show. Sorry.
Wrong show.
But send your pony porn to Jack at MTG Cast.
Yeah. He'll appreciate. Say care of pit imps.
Bo Bright doing some dirty shit. Send it his way.
What?
Rainbow Bright?
Oh, right. She's one of the little pony things.
Okay,
right?
You know far more about this than I do.
Rainbow Bright was a series of...
Wait. Rainbow Bright was another 80s thing.
Yeah.
Never mind. Well, fuck, I don't know. There's gotta be one of those ponies named Rainbow something. Sparkles.
Sparkles.
There's a Rainbow... I guarantee you there's a My Little Pony Rainbow... There's gotta be one named Rainbow something.
I don't know. The only pony names I know go race for money, so...
So if you got any profane images of fucking rainbow glitters getting fucked or something, send it Jack's way.
Oh, anyway, next week we're going to go over our pre-release stories. It'll be me, Ryan, probably another guest, and we're going to bring back that French-Canadian bastard to do some more ban or unban.
Ooh, and I got one for him.
Dude, it's his segment. You can't ask him.
Oh, I'm going to tweet it to him.
Okay. But until next week, guys.
Hey, in diplomacy, I'm playing as England. I just invaded Norway, Holland, and trying to work my way into Sweden, and these fucking Germans get out of my way. So fuck yeah, Scandinavia. Yeah, the Germans in Denmark are pissing me off right now. Sorry. Fuck yeah, Scandinavia.
I want to just leave these crickets in. But I know Truncate Silence will remove them. Have a good one, guys. Go fuck yourself.